Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Today's Sunday session is brought to you thanks to the fine folks at More Beer. Visit them right now at morebeer.com.
I was pouring in my mouth and it just wasn't going down.
My first beer was an IPA, the best IPA I've ever drank, mostly because I brewed it.
If you have a scale that is good for measuring cocaine, you're probably good for measuring hops.
You're scaring me.
I think the information is awesome and the audio sucks.
Make some sugary water, throw in some yeast in there,
and you're going to drink good beer.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
It's fine.
God damn it, man.
Oh, my God.
Live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's another edition of The Session. We've been off the air for, I think, a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
But with very good reason.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, we were traveling.
Oh. That's weird, because I thought I was just working all the time.
No. Well, some of us travel for work.
Oh.
That some
sounds
of us...
fun. We should have done 3 weeks off.
Yeah.
That's kind of rough.
Just permanent well, vacation. Yeah. Are you retiring?
No, I had 4 nights of drinking my ass off.
So. Oh, yeah.
You're retiring from traveling?
Well, if that's what gets me in trouble, yes.
Thanks for sticking with us, everyone, or thanks for joining us, rather, on this to the triumphant return, the June return of The Session. You know, this shouldn't really be a shock, because we usually take a couple weeks off around NHC anyways, because people are traveling back and forth, but we took last Monday off because we wanted to travel to NHC a little bit sooner, and so, you know, as a result, here we are. We usually wouldn't have a show right after NHC, but, you know, that's fine. That's what we do.
And we're here already.
So
let's just do it.
Yeah. Well, I say we. I didn't actually go to NHC. The only people in this room were Beverly and Tasty.
Yep.
But, I don't know. Whatever, dude. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, it happened.
It happened without me.
Everyone's different, but then in some ways everyone's the same. I mean, it's like, you know, some number of thousands of homebrewers.
Yeah.
Very much from the local region, so a good percentage. I would say more than half. I guess they got some data that would support whatever it is, but more than half.
Somewhere there's some numbers that back up.
Back up the vague point I'm making.
I'm just talking to people. About half the people, it's their first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's like they're from Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida. They drove.
Ted, the NHC is the National Homebrewers Conference.
I was just looking on the internet to catch myself up. I figured that out. The NHC, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's going to be homebrew for the age.
That's homebrew. Yes, that's right. We have my close personal friend, Mr. Ted Ramey. He is on the show with us tonight, just sitting in. He does the sports talk. He does a sports talk show on KNBR.
That's correct.
And what else do you do? You do like 8 other things that other people who follow sports know you for, but I don't do anything.
That's okay. Not enough people do. No one knows me. But no, I do the talk show on KNBR in the afternoons from noon to 3. In the mornings, I do the sports for Lamontinelli I also do the San Jose Earthquakes radio play-by-play.
That's soccer, right?
That's soccer. Okay. That's soccer. That's right. A sport that you like.
I do.
That's one of the two you like, hockey and soccer. And then I also do a soccer-specific talk show on Wednesday nights. So I stay really busy, but I poach your time once a week. That's my specialty.
Yes, that's true. I get on the radio and the big boy radio, as I like to call it, and talk beer with Ted. So
it's very fun.
It's pretty cool. I like it. I have a good time.
People
doing
really
it.
Respond to that segment. It's funny,
really,
because there's nothing
with hate mail.
Yeah, well, that's one way, and there's also been the hate tweets. But it doesn't, because, you know, people always ignore the fact that, yeah, I mean, you go to a sporting event and they can charge you however much they want for a beer for a reason.
Yeah.
And, like, now, like, with Levi's Stadium, when that came out, like, they didn't talk about, like, what food vendors they were using, but there was a press release for the beer. So it's this natural mix of sports and beer that people glom onto, and I'm pretty sure they like you more than me, but again, that's why I poach your time once a week.
It
may grow. We'll
okay.
see.
Well, that's good. That's good, man. Hey, and I'm glad I could repay the favor. You can come into our studio. And I went to your studio a few months ago. I happened to be in the city and stopped
nice.
By. Yeah, it was cool. And it was interesting because every workstation had a microphone. Like this, I think the Sennheiser or whatever, like really what we've, when we were trying to buy this microphone, it took like 5 years. To save up, and like everyone had the thing, and I was like, "This is like a voice farm." It was kind of cool. It was kind of
voice
like
voice farm.
Yeah,
I like that.
It was kind of neat. I was like, "Wow, this is just entirely different."
If the corporate entity that they could label us, if they could label us like that, they would.
Yeah,
we
really
would no longer be voice ours. Like, this is our voice farm. This is where we pay the drones to speak.
Right, cage free though.
Yes, cage free.
They do get to roam around. Well, I'm glad you're joining us, man.
Feel
free
too.
To you know, grab a beer and I don't know. Don't step on Warren's lines. You know what I mean?
I'll see what I can
do. I don't know. We have a pretty cool show for you guys. It's going to be a long one, so you may want to settle in. We have Logan Plant from Beavertown Brewing in the UK. We interviewed Logan a couple years ago at the Firestone Walker Invitational on one of the panels, so you can scroll up the video on YouTube and check that out. But this guy sent us like 40 bottles of beer.
Great.
Yeah.
We're going to drink them all tonight.
So I brought five.
Oh,
in,
which is the right amount.
Which is the proper amount, because I don't think you guys can drink that much beer.
I couldn't, and I don't want to.
Yeah.
No, I want you to have it.
Right. No, he said these guys really hooked us up. They have a clear passion for brewing, and it shows. I mean, they're just really stoked to talk about their beer. So we're going to have him on in about half an hour. We're also going to cover NHC in a little bit and BNA 11, but that's at the end of the show. I also, just to bring it down a bit, I do want to talk about the passing of Lee Shepard, who was my co-host on Dr. Homebrew, but I'm going to save that for the end of the show as well, the very, very end of the show, mainly for my own sanity. I honestly don't think I could sit here and talk about the man and then have like a really upbeat show, which maybe is a little selfish, but I don't really give a shit. Brian Cooper, my other co-host on Dr. Homebrew, is going to come in an hour or so and kind of, I don't know, hang out as well. It's the first guy on the BN to pass away, and it's very sad. We're very, very sad. We miss Lee a lot.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't be right to just sit here and pretend it didn't happen. So, but we'll save it for the last of the show.
Right. Not right now.
Not right now.
We didn't just talk about
it. We didn't talk about it. It didn't happen.
No. Right.
Support those who support us, please. We literally would not be here without our sponsors like More Beer, who brings you this show each and every week. So please order some stuff from these guys you hear over the next couple hours and thank them for sponsoring the Brewing Network. That stuff really goes a long way. You can also support us by doing your Amazon shopping via our link that's on our homepage there, as well as hitting up the store and buying some hella sick merchandise. You can also donate. You can become a reoccurring donor. You can become a one-time donor. Join the BN Army, I
believe
is what it's called. Enlist. I think I'm doing too many radio shows because I can't remember now. I'm like, oh,
were
yeah, just donate.
Read that?
No, yeah. I was,
oh.
No, don't donate. That was a mistake.
Yeah. Can I buy merchandise? Merchandise I can buy here tonight?
Here, there's like Hop Grenade merchandise, but otherwise you can go to thebrewingnetwork.com.
Okay.
And
I'll do it.
Yeah, you should, well, let me know. I'll hook
no, I
you
should
up,
pay
Ted.
The full price.
Well, in that case, we got double for you.
Yeah, cost $50.
Yeah,
for a T-shirt.
Tasty, you survived the NHC, and I'm happy about that for you.
Yeah, it's you know, pays it a little bit and skip all the morning lectures and basically. Put yourself in survival mode.
It's
yeah, you can do
course.
It, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Man, I went to one at 10:15, and man, the speaker looked horrible. I'm not going to mention his name. He may have been on this podcast. You could tell he was hungover, man.
Really?
He was all flushed, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, he was hungover.
Big Fuck time. That guy. No, I'm just kidding. Let's do some feedback, Warren. What do you think?
I'm ready.
All right, we got a lot of feedback because that's what happens when we're gone for 2 weeks.
Right. It had time to build up.
It had time to build up. You know, like a virgin. Anyway.
A lot of congratulations for coming in second for Club of the Year.
Yes, I'm really excited we didn't win. I think Bev texted me. Yeah. She's like, we didn't win. I'm like, that's amazing.
Right.
I'm glad.
Yeah, what was the reaction of the crowd, Tasty, since you were there?
Well, they applauded, quaff.
Yeah.
And they didn't mention her name, so they couldn't boo it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Ted, we've been a little backstory. We've been dominating Homebrew Club of the Year for, like, what, 3 years in a row?
I think more than that.
More than that, maybe four.
And the homebrew community, a lot of them were crying about it because they think we're not technically a real club. We're not brick and mortar. We don't have meetings.
Well, what are we in right now?
Exactly right. Well, that was our argument. But we didn't even start the club. One of the listeners like enrolled us as a club. And for those of our listeners who don't have a local club or don't like their local club or get more information from us, they want to support us. So they put the Brewing Network as a club and we would win the Club of the Year award and people would boo the shit out of us. So this year they changed the rules a little bit and we're like, please, we can't win. We can't win. And we didn't win. And I think the BN is now like, ah. It's like the champions who finally lose. But, like, there's no more pressure.
Yeah.
I don't have to three-peat anything or whatever.
Well, but my point was, that's weird because there were no BNers that booed because we didn't win.
Well, that's true.
So maybe you should be better sports about it. Everyone else.
All right, let's get on with the feedback here. In 2010, this is from Aaron, by the way. In 2010, I took my kids to Disneyland for the first time. It was expensive, but my kids loved it. It changed their lives, but the highlight of the trip for me was that there was a brewery nearby, Alcatraz Brewing, which is now closed. In 2013, we went back. 3 consecutive 12 to 15-hour days in the park, lines, fast passes, the new cars ride, hit everything. Great success. The highlight of the trip for me was that 4 new breweries opened up within 2.5 miles of the park entrance. Now it's 2016 and we're going back to Disney. I'm not going to the park. Instead, I'm going to spend each day visiting every nearby brewery. I remember JP and Bebo had a Disney podcast. They just tried looking up. It's Ears Up? Question mark. Yeah, Ears Up with a Z, though. Or you can do Ears Up. -podcast.com. It's a whole thing. Don't worry about it. I don't see it on the Brewing Network site. No, it's not on the... Actually, I think it's in the About Us. I think there's a link. And we have, like, bios.
Warm. Oh, you linked your Ears Up?
I didn't do it. Deal. Someone else did. Yeah, I didn't do shit. Yeah.
Well, it's on your Twitter, right, JP?
You got to promote.
It's on my Twitter, too. Yeah, well, yes. Well, I didn't... And someone did it for me, so I didn't have an opportunity to not even do it.
That's nice.
But, yeah, it's on Twitter. It's everywhere. It's not beer-related at all. It's Disney-related, like you just said. Anyway, there you go. Now you know. He says, okay, I'm drinking toaster pastry, and it rules. God bless you. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
This next one is says, Jip, tell your fucking sharks to get their act together. Mm. What the fuck? If they don't straighten their shit out, we're going to end up with another Penguin Cup. No one wants that. Love, your neighborhood Bruins fan. Too late, Ted.
Yeah.
Too late, man.
I'm still processing pain. Maybe. I was telling my wife last night, we were driving home from my parents where we watched the game, and I had to, like, control, because I was talking about how I was like, I wanted that to take a picture of my kids next to the Stanley Cup. And I was like, nope, got to stop right now. I could, like, feel emotions rising. So, yeah, let's...
Did you go to the game yesterday?
No. I just watched it with my parents. Because since I already travel so much, I can't just leave my wife to be like, I'm going to go watch sports right now and not get paid for it. As opposed to the times where I'm not leaving you at home and traveling to go watch sports. So, yeah, I just watched it on TV. But, no, it's painful.
Yeah.
It was painful.
It was tough. It was a tough game, man. They looked like a completely different team between the second and the third period. I don't understand.
Hard to win when you can't get shots off.
Right.
Maybe it's because they didn't have a chance to hear you read that feedback letter.
That's probably what the game. So it's my fault.
Right, because you took last Monday off.
Isn't everything
on you.
Everything's my fault. This is from Damo Burka Durka Dirk.
That's his given name.
I think that's his Christian name. Yeah. It doesn't sound Christian. Greetings from the Zitka and Flocka infested state of Florida. We just started getting 21st Amendment beer distributed here. I know Sully is a good friend of the show, and I'm pretty sure I heard JP said he and Sully homebrewed together while he was developing the recipe for Toaster Pastry IPA. It's a spectacular beer. To me, it tastes almost like Lagunitas Brown Sugar Light. I'm wondering if the fine folks at the BN could get us a recipe. I love the beer, but it's $6 a can here in bottle shops, which is bananas, he says. Yeah, that's a lot, but, you know, whatever, dude, Florida. Sincerely, Damo. Yeah, I can try. I don't know. Thanks for the email.
Yeah, we talked about it when they first rolled out with it.
We did.
Sully was on the show, and he brought cans. It was one of the first times that it left the brewery.
Oh. Well, there you go.
How much are they here? I don't get why he'd be...
Not that much.
No, not even close.
Yeah. So why are they that much more in Florida? That sounds like a
Florida
black market or something.
Yeah, probably.
It is Florida.
This is from Nick. He says, Justin, you know Talent Hack. I've been a longtime listener and frequently jump between the archives and new shows. I've had the pleasure of meeting Bevo last time. I came to deliver some beer to the Grenade and must say she was very pleasant. He must say that, Beverly. I also got to catch a glimpse of the studio, and it was quite impressive. I would like to have seen what you guys started with some 13 years ago. Well, 13 years ago, this show wasn't around. Anyway, as an avid home brewer and lover of the show, I wondered if I couldn't come down sometime to hang out for a session and bring some homebrew as well as some new Helvetia beer and suit the sit with you guys. Let me know your thoughts. P.S. Suck at JP. Yeah, Nick, come on down whenever you want, man.
From Sacramento?
I don't know. Is he from Sacramento?
I thought the brewery that you just read was a Sacramento brewery.
I don't know.
Oh.
But thank you for your input.
Well, I was going to say, it's not that far of a trip, so you could just show up. You don't need to ask.
That's what I'm saying. You show up whenever you want, man. Yeah. Don't even worry about it. This next one is from DG. He says, thanks, guys, and Bevo. Just wanted to send you a little heads up on the great customer service from Brad at Beersmith. I'm not going to read the whole email, because basically he was like, I'm stoked that Brad emailed me back. So there you go.
Brad will do that.
Yeah. Next one we got is from No Name. Didn't even sign his name. So it seems that the topic of East Coast Cloudy IPA has received a lot of attention on the show lately. Every time I listen to people defending the style, it drives me fucking crazy. I don't know if you guys have been to the East Coast lately, but let me fill you in from a Southwest Virginia professional brewer's point of view. There is so much shitty cloudy beer here, it's baffling. I think that the biggest problem with this cloudy IPA craze is that it makes it seem like it's okay to serve cloudy beer of any style. I go to so many breweries where cloudiness infests every style they serve. I think the reason this has been tolerated and even embraced is that the East Coast beer drinker population just hasn't been given enough good beer to know better. Everyone has to admit that the Alchemist, who makes Heady Topper, and some of the other cloudy IPA breweries make some good beer, he stresses that, and that they are mostly cloudy from mash additions like oats and wheats and hop phenols, but wouldn't they be even better if allowed time to clear? Blah, 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 blah. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I don't know.
So you rode in as a Southwest Virginian.
I pretended to.
Just to bring it back up again.
Right. He said I was born in Maryland, so I'm completely impartial.
Yeah, go back to the last show. We covered that.
Yeah, for sure.
We agree.
Yeah. Dear Brewcasters and Bevo, let me start by saying I've been a loyal listener for the past 2 years, and you guys do an amazing job. JP, being from New York and having lived up and down the East Coast, I can say without a doubt 110% agree with you about the New England-style IPA being a travesty to the brewing community. Blah, blah, blah. He says, keep preaching, and he called me a son of a bitch, which my mom was a saint. That was rude. Also of note, I was in no way offended by your comments on the style, nor should anyone else. Tell that douche to get the stick out of his ass and man up and drink a real IPA. Oh, he says, this is from Adam. He says, P.S., tell Tasty, thanks for the ad on Instagram, and I apologize. it gets better, Warren. Don't worry about it. And I apologize for the lack of beer-related posts lately. I've been lacking in the brewing and drinking-related posts. Mm. How long have you guys been dating? That's cute.
I don't know who that is.
It's Adam. The guy who used to post a lot of beer, but now he doesn't because he's been lacking.
Sorry,
on
Adam,
it.
I don't remember how active you were.
Ah, dude.
Must have gone below my radar. I love you, though, nonetheless. Yeah. Obviously, you love me. I want to keep things going.
Always weigh your options.
Hey, what's that?
Keep them open.
Yeah. It's like LeBron James. He takes the high road every time.
This is from Andy. He says, at 1 hour, 52 minutes, and 45 seconds, you claim Heady Topper to be, quote, terrible. Could you please explain to how the former long-running number one rated beer on beeradvocate.com could actually be, quote, terrible? Thanks in advance. Listen to the show. I don't know. If I say it's terrible, I back it up. So I don't know what to tell you, Andy.
Everyone's palate's different.
And really, okay, yeah, you're right. I had one can. I shouldn't say it's terrible. The can that I had was not great. The can that I had was terrible. I'm sure it's a fantastic beer.
I've had three cans.
Yeah.
And none of them were that different.
Well, see, there you go. Maybe I just don't like the beer.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all right. This is from Gene from Pittsburgh. He says, first, let's get this out here, assuming JP is screening these. The Sharks are done in six. Up yours, Gene. Braun is a pedophile. What?
What?
I think now that I read that, is that slander, Ted?
It's something.
It's something.
I'm not gonna try and legally discern what it is. It's not nice.
No, it's not nice. Thornton is going to quit after game two and join the Quakers, I guess, because his beard. Pavelski is on the FBI watch list, which is the only reason he's still playing, because he can't get on a plane to go home. All right. I mean, you weren't wrong. I mean, you were wrong about everything else, but they were done in six. Oh, he says, what is Nitro doing to IPAs to kill the bitterness? Tasty, you're a smart guy.
Well, I don't know. It softens. The carbonation buys out, right? There's no carbonation.
Right. There's no carbonic acid.
There's quite a bit right there. And the nitrogen tends to soften the everything about the
thing.
The malt and the hops.
Do me a favor, Tasty. Would you mind just pouring these beers for everybody while I finish this? Thank you. I apologize. This is from Clint. He says, hey, I just want to say thanks for reading my feedback. I was pleasantly surprised. Also, I wanted to apologize to JP for calling him a douchebag. When I was typing that, it didn't sound quite as rude as when he read it. So it's my fault, apparently, that rude.
Yeah, why don't you read it better?
I don't know. I thoroughly enjoy JP's humor, and I think he's doing an awesome job as host. I actually don't miss Justin as much as I thought I would. If Justin doesn't enjoy the job anymore, no reason for him to stick around. He won't be missed. Winky smiley-faced emoji.
Oh, what, just because you don't enjoy a job means you don't have to do it anymore?
No, you still have to do it.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, good for Justin.
Thank you. This next one. Hey, Brewcaster. So I was sitting in this gastropub in some town in California that I don't remember the name of. The food was mediocre, and my first beer was good. For my second pint, I had ordered Nitro Old Rasputin, but the server said that they were out and brought me a sample of another dark beer he described as being similar but, quote, bolder. It tasted like they hadn't cleaned their tap lines in 6 months, and I sat there trying not to spit out this mouthful of rancid beer into the server's face. I thought, I wonder what those jerk-offs at the Brewing Network are doing. I'm glad that kind of emotion made you think of us. Appreciate that.
Probably
jerking off. Yeah. Anyway, probably jerking off. That's right. Anyway, it's been like 2 years since I listened to any of your podcasts, but I downloaded a few and bring them at work recently. You guys are as funny as ever, maybe even more without Justin. Where did you put him anyway? Probably buried in JP's backyard or something. He's definitely not, because that would entail me doing yard work, and I don't like doing that. This next one's from Cameron. He says, I'm sitting here listening to the latest Brewlosophy show podcast, and I just want to tell you all thank you for the service you provide. The knowledge I've gleaned from the BN helped me land a great job at a local brew shop in Athens, Georgia, which paid for my living expenses throughout grad school. I feel like I'm part of the silent majority that knows producing the show takes more than sitting on your ass for 3 hours a week and telling Beardy to shut the fuck up. It seems there's a vocal minority of people that like to whine and complain about nitpicky bullshit on the show, which I find hilarious. Because they can't grasp that they're arguing their own opinion regarding an opinion. I just wanted you all to know your work is appreciated, and that I wrote and edited this email while looking through a juicy East Coast crystal fucking clear IPA called Tropicalia. That's Georgia Growler guy. Thanks, but instead of doing that, you could have just donated, bro.
It's always something.
This is another juicy IPA thing I'm not going to read, but this guy goes... He tells me my opinion can suck a dick, and then he wants to know if Justin lost the death pool.
Losing means you died, right?
Yes, I think.
I don't think he's dead.
No, yet. It means you picked the wrong person.
Right. Oh.
Blah, blah, blah. That's a boring one. This guy wants to hear more about Doc's liquor. I don't know. Feedback's over. Feedback today was brought to you by... Beer Law Center. You go to thebeerlawcenter.com. If you guys are opening a brewery, and I know at least three of you listening to this podcast right now are, in fact, opening a brewery. That's just the odds. Contact John at the Beer Law Center. Go to beerlawcenter.com. He will not only help you protect all of your assets, protect your trademark and your copyright, but he'll help you fill out all that paperwork and do all that bullshit that you don't want to do. He's very, very good at it. He helps me with my personal thing. He helps the Brewing Network defend the hop grenade. trademark there, and he can help you too. So definitely hit up John at the Beer Law Center, beerlawcenter.com. He's a good dude. Check him out. Okay, what do we have here? We're pouring a beer. This is a new beer from Drake's, and they were kind enough to fire us off some beer. It's called Kickback. Have you guys
Kickback?
Have you heard about it yet? I've never even actually heard about it until
no,
right
no,
now.
I had it at the Session Fest that took place a few weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
Oh.
Yeah, they had it on there. Drake's is kind of like the anchor brewery. They had like seven or eight session beers, and one was this Kickback and this new branding package they have here.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's, I don't know, like late 70s Hawaiian.
Yeah, it's kind of like retro.
Retro, you're right.
Like Las Vegas or something. It's kind of like, you know, we're light and airy kind of thing.
It reminds me of like...
Other breweries are doing the same thing.
Like Magnum P.I., like Honolulu, yeah. Yeah. Right? I don't know.
A lot of pastels.
Mm-hmm. A lot of pastels. That's a good beer.
It's got the Drake's logo on there. It's cut into the shape of the label. It's pretty
good. Has anybody noticed...
I like it.
I mean, I guess it takes people watching Silicon Valley how much Drake's branding... is in the show. There's tins hanging on walls, magnets on refrigerators.
Yeah. No, I had a note.
It's
no,
all
their
over the place.
Their product really good.
Yeah, yeah.
They must not care, or they have to intentionally do that.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Be that much?
Yeah.
I just wonder if Drake's is paying them, or if they're just repping a local brewery.
I think it's beer they like.
And they just picked it. That's cool.
Probably, yeah. Now, this is a good little beer, man. It's a Session IPA, seasonal release. It tastes relatively low on, I think, actually, there's a sheet here.
Yeah, they've got some
on the bottom. It says 51 IBUs, 4.3%.
Yeah, 4.3.
Starting gravity. It's nice to give.
Oh, they give that too.
Yeah, 10.5.
10.5. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Which means I don't know what the
1042.
Let me do the math here. It's a 4.3. That must have finished about.
Oh, they said it finished at like 2.8.
2.8.
You guys are smart.
Well, I remember what I read 5 minutes ago.
But, great.
Yeah.
I saw a spec sheet on it sometime today, and the grist is two row, and then
golden naked oats.
Naked oats,
yeah.
And then some flaked oats from grain millers.
Oh, that's
called
cool.
Hauled barley flakes.
And they got all those barley new school hops, the Eldorado, they got Mosaic
in
there.
Quite a different number of hops.
That's tasty.
Yeah.
Check this out. A portion of the sales from six packs and pints of Kickback will go to trail restoration and cleanup projects at the East Bay Regional Parks.
Nice.
Wow, check this out. This is the
first. That's the Kickback?
That's the Kickback. This is the first new six pack that Drake's has launched in 6 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Right?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy, man.
I think something had to go, but whatever.
Make room.
I like it. Well, it's a seasonal, so you won't see it all the time. So definitely check it out, man.
No, it's great. Like a lot of body.
It's pretty delicious.
I look for in this kind of beer.
That's a good summertime beer.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Warren, do we have a Twitter game?
Yes.
Our Twitter game is brought to you by HopTech. Jade and Roberto are ready to package and ship your homebrewing supplies and equipment to you directly. So go to HopTech.com. Check those fine people out. Support them. They are giant supporters of the Brewing Network. They're good people, and they make some killer beer, and they want to help you out. So check them out. Warren.
Do it.
Twitter game.
Basically, it was just inspired by the fact that Quaff did an awesome job this year at NHC. And I was wondering, since obviously everyone was happy with the result, I don't think everyone's going to be happy 12 months from now. There's going to be something that's going to bother somebody.
Okay, about the Quaff win?
Just about anything. What if Quaff wins next year?
Okay, which they've done before.
Which they've won multiple times.
They've gone back to back. Yeah.
So what are the naysayers going to boo next year?
What are the naysayers going to boo next year?
At NHC.
At NHC. Okay. Yeah. Awards-wise.
Anything.
Just anything.
I mean,
maybe they'll boo Gary when he gets up
there. It could be booing at BNA 12. I don't know.
Yeah, but probably will be booing at BNA
12. Can I inquire? Are they literally like loudly booing?
Yeah.
Like, it was the most awkward thing I've ever experienced.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And we got a lot of mileage out of it. Made for great radio for the last like 3 years, dude.
That's really bold.
Yeah.
Like booing, when it's sports, it's okay. But like to boo like a person or an entity.
Over a hobby, you're all coming together to talk about how to make better.
I feel like besides the booing, didn't somebody get up and like storm out?
Yeah, I think those were onesie twosie anecdotal information, but I don't doubt it. And what blew me away was that it wasn't even us. We didn't start the club. We actively.
These guys don't know that. So.
Well, I know, but that's what it made it more uncomfortable for us. I think we didn't have any desire to do it. It was a direct response from our listenership.
It's kind of hard to stop it because it's not ours to stop.
I was in the club. Well, I still am in the club and won medals and competed under the BN Army Club banner also.
Yeah.
And so it got real personal to me where it's just like, guys, it's a club for people that I was in the middle of nowhere, Minnesota. The nearest club was 2 hours away. And so what was I going to do?
We be clubbing.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I get booed for making good beer.
That seems rational.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. Sports fans.
Right.
Competition fans,
yeah,
I guess.
It's a numbers thing.
I don't know. Anyway, we're going to take a break, everybody. And then when we come back, we're going to have the famous Logan Plant from Beavertown Brewery. We're going to taste some of his beers and chat with him. Kid used to be a home brewer, and now he's rocking the world in some tasty beers, man. So it's going to be a good show. Stick with us. It's a session. Hang on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood,
made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. Morebeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. Morebeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to morebeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to morebeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Marin Brewing Company in Northern California has been making award-winning beers for more than 25 freaking years. Today, I want to tell you about their new 12-ounce cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale. The good stuff, Mount Tam is bright gold, 5.5% ABV to keep you feeling good, and has been winning awards since 1989. If you're visiting the Bay Area, get your butt out to Marin Brewing Company. They pour tasty beers and serve great food every day until midnight. Come in for a tour, stay for the food, and pick up a six-pack of cans of Mount Camp Pale Ale to enjoy at home, camping, biking, or whatever the hell you do. Owner Brendan Moylan has this to say about Marin Brewing beers.
It's freaking awesome.
Marin Brewing has won more than 100 gold medals in international competitions. Check out marinbrewing.com for all their award-winning beers, food, and merch. Marin Brewing Company in Larkspur, California. Award-winning taste, refreshing finish. It's freaking awesome.
Brewcasters are back.
And it ain't 401 beer.
Whatever.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us, everybody. While we get the lovely Mr. Plant on the phone, I do want to tell you guys about Great Fermentation. If you guys are in the market for Blickman products or anything homebrew related, to be honest with you, check out greatfermentations.com. They have the largest catalog of Blickman products on the web, providing same-day shipping on some of the most some of their main items, which most vendors can take up to 3 weeks to ship out. Their staff is some of the best trained in using Blickman products, which, let's be honest, you want somebody who actually knows what the product is to teach you how to use it, not just read a manual. Anybody can do that. And they have top-notch customer service. More to the point, they have a coupon code.
What?
Yes. BNARMY50. That's BNARMY50. And you get $1 shipping on all orders over $50 through the end of May, excluding bulk grains, because that would not be fair. GreatFermentations.com. Use code BNARMY50. Okay. Are we ready?
I'm ready.
I was telling the guys, Bev, I need a producer.
Yeah. Producer.
How about a day of producer?
If looks could kill.
What do you mean produced?
I don't know.
More glassware.
Yeah.
I'm getting more glassware.
All right, I think we have Logan on the line. Logan, are you with us, buddy?
Where's the opener?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
All right, good evening. Good evening, or good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
In my case.
To you. It's like you've been up for like 1,000 hours already or something. What is it, 2:30?
Yes, yes. Yeah, we don't sleep over in the UK. We just tend to, just break on through to the other side. And all is well.
Good,
no, it's 2:30 in the morning here, or 2:40, something like that.
What did you stay up all night and you know, party, or did you just kind of like take a nap like a responsible business owner?
Oh, no, I never sleep. You know, again, it's just, you know, it's big beers. Towards 11 o'clock, I like to hit the kind of double IPAs and just play on through.
11 in the morning.
No, I'm a dad. I was like in bed at 10 o'clock. So I just set my alarm and got up and here I am. Just about.
Wow.
You're just about making sense, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're a good sport, man. I appreciate it. I know. So I got turned on to you through our friend Phil Lowry, who we call UK Phil, or at least I call UK Phil, but I'm sure to you he's just Phil.
I thought he was French.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm joking.
Yeah. You know, and I remember hearing about your brewery a couple of years ago, and our friend Sean O'Sullivan from the 2NA was gonna be out there, and he's like, I'm gonna send you some good beer from this little brewery, and you're gonna love it. But he never sent it, so he's also a liar. So he's liar Phil to me now too.
Yeah.
He's definitely French,
but that's okay because. You know, in a roundabout way, he came through, man. And I'm glad that we're able to talk to you. And thanks for staying up so early, late.
Oh, man, it's an absolute pleasure. You know, Phil's a good friend of ours and he's doing a great job in the brewing industry. And yeah, he's been a big supporter of ours for the last 4 years. So no, it's a pleasure to be on with you guys.
Awesome. Well, thanks, man, again. So now before we get too far into the craft beer here, you used to be a home brewer. Which I find fascinating. I always like talking you still are a homebrewer. You still homebrew.
Well, it never leaves you. You know, I'm always going to be a homebrewer, I guess. That's where I started it, and I think I'm not a master brewer by any means, but my feet are still in homebrew and construction of recipe and you know, that's exactly where I am, yeah.
How did you get started in homebrewing? How did you get turned on to making your own beer?
Well, I mean, it's a long journey, you know, in the UK, you know, the beer is a massive part of our life as it is in the US, and and the pub especially is every man's kind of extension to his front room. It's like an extension to his castle, if you like. So as a kid, I was dragged around many pubs in the middle of England in an area called the Black Country, which is famous for brewing some amazing cask ales. And as a four-year-old, I didn't have much of a kind of taste for it. But the older I got and the more I hung out there with
me either. I was more of a whiskey guy then.
Exactly. That's it. You know.
But once you turn five, everything was different.
Well, once drinking age in the UK is about 11, I think. When I was out there then with my mates, we really got into beer about the age of 18, and we'd make, kind of big trips out to certain pubs that would be serving certain beers. So at the age of 18 or 19, I became obsessed with ale, and I just had dreams of grandeur, you know, where one day I might be opening a brewery, and I just love the whole process around making beer, serving beer, drinking beer, talking about beer. So that was it. That's kind of where it started.
Were you still into cask beers then at that point, or were you getting more into the U.S. styles?
At that point, that was like nearly 20 years ago. So there wasn't much on the horizon coming over from the US. So it was just driven by locality and freshness, and just drinking local breweries. As I say, there was maybe like three or four that I grew up with and that I still go back to. You know, when I go back to, we're based in London now, but I go back to the Midlands. My family's still there. And my first thing as a kind of disciple is to go to these pubs again and drink this beer.
That's where you had your epiphany. That's where you had your epiphany that you wanted to be in this business.
We'd sit in beer gardens, you know, on a lovely day drinking this amazing amber nectar, and I'd be sitting there with my mates going, you know, one day I'm gonna do this, you know. And that was at the age of 20. I had visions of doing it somewhere in Wales, you know, on a mountainside somewhere. Then I thought, you know, who the hell's going to drink this? There's only sheep.
Now I know
the industry a lot more. Actually, opening a brewery on the side of a mountain in Wales doesn't sound too bad, and I think we could make it work.
You probably could, man. It sounds great to me.
Yeah. By the age, taking it on further, you know, just continuously, I traveled a lot. I was in a couple of music in some bands, and you know, luckily enough, I got to travel a little bit and drink lots of great beer and make notes and, you know, build a whole kind of a whole kind of system in my mind of what I loved and what I liked. And by the age of 30-31, I made the move and just went for it.
So beer took you from music.
Big time. Yeah.
Really?
Big time. Yeah. It was, I was a singer and I could never drink. I wanted to try and look after my voice, but the one thing I loved to do was to drink and socialize.
Is it just because you weren't a very good singer and now you're hiding it behind a brewery, or?
Yeah, that's it. Basically, okay. I was crap. No, I just really wanted to, you know, I became pretty unhappy actually, because I couldn't, you know, do what I love doing, which was experiencing loads of different beers and being on the road. You know, you had to look after yourself. And in the end, I walked into a place actually in Brooklyn. We were playing a gig out there in on Metropolitan, and there was this amazing barbecue joint opposite. So I went in there for some pulled pork afterwards, and it's called Fete Sau. It's still there. It's an amazing barbecue place with great craft beers, and that's where I had my epiphany. It just, you know, the smell of the smoked meats and the craft beers on offer and the vibe there was amazing. So I pretty much left the band a week later and started homebrewing.
A week later.
Yeah, literally came home, had a shave and cut my hair and started homebrewing.
You got respectable.
Yeah, that was it. I was out. I was gone. And then I started to make a mess in the kitchen, and my wife was really pissed off, and the kids weren't very happy, but it's all turned out nice in the end.
Yeah. Every once in a while, or every home brewer usually goes through that, where they're brewing beers and they're doing the thing, and then they eventually get kicked out. Like, you're making too much of a mess. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, go and build a man cave at the bottom of the garden and blow it up or something. So I did that. I did that. And actually what happened was, it was that place. It was Fete Sau. I'm going in there and tasting the barbecue and the vibe. I was like, this is it. I'm going to open a barbecue restaurant, like a, you know, a classic American style brew pub. And I'm going to have the brewery in the kitchen. And I'm going to, that's it. I'm just going to go for it. So that was my goal and my aim. So I started homebrewing towards that as a kind of menu to pair with. So that's where a lot of my original ideas came from, was driven by the food, was driven by the, you know, the kind of infusions and stuff we were going to use in the menu. So basically I started brewing a smoked porter, the Smog Rocket, yes, which is a real typical kind of old industrial London style beer, to go with the beef ribs. Cause the, you know, the beef ribs are all kind of charry and smoked and molassesy. And then the eight ball, which is a rye IPA, that was to go with the pork ribs, that kind of spice and dry and the kind of earthiness of the pork and the rye went really well. So okay, that's where I started.
Well, hang on a second, because you're not only making me thirsty, but hungry, right, and I can't do anything about the hunger, but we have a lot of your beer here. What should we open while we're talking about this stuff? What's the first beer that you want us to try?
And how come you didn't send us any meat?
Yeah, where's these ribs, man? What's going on?
I should have. But next time you're in London, you must come because it's a great experience.
All right. Done.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I know we sent you a bunch, and I think the is there a couple of unlabeled cans there? Because
there's the Bloody Notorious. They are sort of unlabeled, but they have like paper labels, gaffers taped around.
If you take the labels off, they will be unlabeled.
Just to show you what it would be like.
Right.
We get the idea.
The labels have come in now, so they've been labeled.
Oh, okay,
but that was just a little prototype just to show you what it would be like.
For homebrewers.
I mean, that's it. You might as well start with a 9.1% double, blood orange IPA.
Yeah, it's not 230 here.
No, why wouldn't we?
I'm just cracking into my triples now.
You are a dad.
It's triple apart.
Yeah, we'll get there, man. Don't even worry about it.
So, in your place, what's the best selling style of beer? You know, what do the people seem to go after?
In the restaurant, which is still going, Duke's is, so it's barbecue driven. It's a restaurant. So we do have a great array of beers. There's like 60 different craft beers to choose from, on keg and in the fridge. But because people are going there for a more, maybe just more of a restaurant experience. Yeah. A lot of the more extravagant styles of beer or the bigger ABV beers tend not to be, drunk en masse. So a lot of people are going for, the IPA, the pale ale,
right,
maybe some nice Berliner Weisses in there and stuff. But but at the brewery, we've moved now. Obviously, we've moved like 3 or 4 times now. So now we're up in North London in Tottenham. And we brew a boatload of different things, which is great.
And then you serve those beers there.
Are you drinking Bloody Notorious?
Yeah, we just cracked it right open.
Okay, so that's a beer in collaboration with some good friends of ours, Boneyard, who are from Bend in Oregon.
Yeah, sure, yeah, we party with those guys. Those guys are crazy. They'll kill you.
Yeah.
They're likely to kill you.
Yeah. They are mad, but lovely mad. And we brewed a couple of times with them now. And one of the things Tony, the brewmaster there, loves is hops. So, and I love hops. And he wanted to, mess around with some fruit infusions because we do a lot of Beavertown with some different zests and juices. And we do a blood orange IPA called Bloody L. And he does a beer called Notorious, which is a triple IPA. So we thought, let's just keep it easy and simple. Let's just put the two recipes together.
You took it down from a triple to a double.
Compromise.
Yeah. So it's a shed load of blood orange juice and zest, real simple grain bill and Citra Mosaic Amarillo and a real clean kind of U.S. style yeast strain.
It tastes great. It smells. Yeah. The aroma is amazing.
Yeah. It's got the blood orange and hops like tie in together really well.
Yeah, they really do.
So yeah.
It's
dangerous.
Well, that's not all malt, though. You have sugar in there, too, right? Dextrose?
Yeah. We got a bunch of dextrose in there to thin it out and, make it easier.
You kind of have to with a beer like
that. No, it'd be too malty if you...
Yeah. Well, and if you made up all that sugar with malt, essentially, instead of dextrose afterwards, wouldn't that cover up the kind of delicate flavors in the
It'd be like
the
a barley one.
Zest?
A barley. That's what you need. A double or triple IPA is you use sugar instead of malt.
Yeah.
So it'd be just like a barley wine. Like clovingly sweet. Unless you pop it up like crazy.
That's it, exactly. And I don't like my my IPAs and my doubles and my triple IPAs like that. I like them real kind of dry. So this beer, for example, ferments really low on gravity. On Plato, I don't know, maybe it was at like 1.5 or 2 finishing. Really dry, wow. really easy, yeah. Really easy on the palate.
That's super dry.
And then with an American ale,
yeah.
That's
oh, great. Yeah. It's a ripper.
That's a tasty beer, man. I don't usually go for these kind of things, but that's good.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem is these beers are generally not this dry. And I think maybe that's what I like. I think I like it more dry.
Yeah. Yeah, beers like this.
Drinking, having the opportunity to come over and drink a lot of stuff like Pliny and Pliny the Elder and beers in that kind of tilt. That's it. They're just sessionable, 8 or 9% beers. Like, what more do you want?
Which is very, very dangerous. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, that's what makes a good beer. And clearly that's what people want. I mean, you look at Pliny. Look how popular that thing is.
Well, in the UK, we're all about session. But if you can make a 9% beer sessionable, then, hey, ho, everyone's happy. Yeah.
It's a shorter session.
What kind of base malt did you use? Did you use a Maris Otter or... Did you get some American Turo or something sent over?
We use a great maltster called Simpson's Malt, who are Scottish and like fifth generation maltster. And we use their extra pale.
Oh, okay.
Which is basically like a Pilsner malt, I guess. Mm-hmm. So really low in color and we can really ferment it out and the attenuation is really good. Gets it right down low.
Yeah.
Let me jump back to your homebrewing real quick, Logan.
Yeah.
So you opened up a barbecue joint, which to me sounds crazy. I when I think of, someone opening a restaurant up in England, I don't think American-style barbecue.
Yeah. So you'd use mustard-based sauce or vinegar-based sauce?
That's the question, north or south. Where did you go? Yeah.
Vinegar or mayonnaise?
We're a mix. We're kind of bastard of things. But I'd say
right.
Leaning into a kind of Texan style.
Okay.
Texan, yes. All right, good.
So, all about the rub. All about the rub and the smoke. Right. The sauce is on the side.
Thank you.
Yeah, slow and low. So the beef ribs are in there for about 16 hours. The pulled pork's in there for about 20, 24 hours. The long pork ribs are in there for about 12 hours. Different rubs, different types of wood.
Literally, two people in the studio just looked at me and mouthed, "I'm hungry."
We try and be as traditional as we can to the craft of American style barbecue. We've got some great smokers in that we imported from the US, and I think we do a great job. And we get a lot of positive comments from guys from the U.S., from Kansas and Texas and places like that. So that's really good.
If the guys from Texas think it's good, then you're bona fide. Then
you got the Kansas City barbecue judges.
Yeah,
so they're no slouches either.
Right,
so
that says a lot.
So you open up this barbecue joint and you start homebrewing and you're making beers to pair with the food. So it seemed like right away you knew kind of that beer and food were the thing. Those are the things that you really wanted to focus on.
Yeah, that concentration to begin with, especially as a home brewer, when you can, I guess you can jazz on many different styles and push many different recipes. But I really wanted to concentrate and just go step by step. And therefore, I just brewed the 8-Ball, the Rye IPA, and the Smog Rocket, the Smoked Porter, as much as I could. And that was it. And then working on having the recipe in mind and the menu in mind, was key. And I think for when we started, starting as a small brewery, I moved from my 5-gallon, I think, homebrew kit to the brewery that was in the kitchen originally, which was 6 barrel, maybe US barrels.
Okay.
Again, not very big. But it was a lot more beer than the 5-gallon. So, and I wanted to get it right. So, I'd be brewing in the day, and then I'd be serving the beer at night on the bar. And I did that for about the first 6 months, and I learned a lot, from the people, from the drinkers who were coming in. Mm-hmm. I trusted them. I trusted their palates, and I just put it to work on the recipe and just kept honing and trying to make it better. Really,
were these experienced craft beer drinkers, for lack of a better term, or were they just your standard cask? Here's an ESB kind of a guy coming in trying to drink a smoked porter and give you feedback on how well it pairs with the barbecue beef ribs.
It was a mix. It was a mix because at that point we started 4 years ago, and I'd say the craft industry, the craft brewing industry at that time was just about to kick pretty heavily. You know, I mean, I guess people like Brewdog and Thornbridge and the likes, they've been going since, you know, maybe nearly 10 years now, I guess. But when we started 4 years ago, it was still kind of, there was, man, I don't know what there was. There was maybe 11 breweries in London at the time when I decided to go for it. And then when we opened, there was 22.
Wow.
But 4 years on, there's now like 90 in London.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole market has changed. The drinkers evolved. It was different. There was a lot of cask drinkers back then, but there was also this kind of underground movement of people wanting more for their experience, you know.
So you're saying the dominant styles that were being made amongst these 80 new breweries, it was American style, or they did traditional styles as well?
No, nowadays, I mean, with those, so back 4 years ago, there were a couple of breweries who were really pushing, you know, American-driven IPAs, bringing over some great hops from the US, from Australia, New Zealand, and really pushing that kind of West Coast style.
Well, that way you could get it fresh, yeah, right? So a lot of times what you're getting in bottles or package wasn't as fresh as you could make locally.
No, exactly. Mm-hmm. You'd be getting a lot of the big brewers sending over stuff. And, you know, to begin with, to my palate, it was like, oh, well, yeah, that's different. But it kind of tastes a little bit kind of caramelly and maybe a little bit like cardboard. So the beers had aged, you know, and that wasn't, you know, my palate became a little bit more kind of attuned to that stuff. So, drinking, you know, like breweries like the Colonel, who's another amazing brewer in London, drinking some of his IPAs.
Love his chicken.
Back then it just blew my mind. And I was like, wow, this is it, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, we didn't brew our first pale ale for the first 6 months, I don't think.
Jeez.
Which is usually people's first thing to go to.
Right.
Well, something lighter in ABV,
So you started out doing a smoked porter in a barbecue joint. And so I figured that would be the best scenario in order to try to sell a commercial batch of a smoked beer. Because I know a lot of brewers here would be afraid, like, as much as I love a good Rauch beer, I'm never going to make one at my pub or whatever because it'll be around forever.
That's true. The smoke style is not very popular in the U.S. Is it at least approachable in the U.K. over there?
You know, again, when I started, you know, starting off with a rye IPA and a smoked porter, I think maybe breweries had brewed those styles before, but they hadn't gone, okay, this is our core range to start with.
Right.
So it was a bit of a kind of ballsy move, but it defined in my head what I wanted to do and how we were going to drive ourselves stylistically from the off, I guess. So we've never looked back, you know, of being slightly left field.
Yeah.
I just opened the rye IPA because I'm hearing you talk about it, and I want to know what the hell you're talking about.
So 8-Ball, I mean, it's almost like a bit more of a kind of East Coast IPA. There's a little bit of kind of rye crystal in there, some plain rye as well. There's about a 20%, I think, between the two in the grist, so pretty heavy on the rye. So you get that kind of spicy earthiness, but you also get that kind of juiciness of the slight crystal malt coming through with some lovely New Zealand hops. Dry hops, and it's one of our most loved beers that still goes, and it's still the same homebrew recipe, which is really cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
you brewed it once and it was a hit, and you're like, well, that's done. Now what's next?
Well, actually,
you were getting New Zealand hops 4 years ago.
Yeah. We were getting some good US hops and some good Kiwi hops, some Australian hops as well. There's a couple of big distributors that bring the hops in from those countries. And in the beginning, when I was tiny, you know, on the 6-barrel kit, you know, just as a kind of startup, I had to fight for every bit of Citra or, you know, every leaf of Citra or Amarillo I could get my hands on, you know, to construct recipes that I really wanted to drive forward. So it was tough.
How were you finding out about these ingredients? Just, you know, your travels into the U.S. or talking with U.S. brewers maybe that you had met or kind of just, that sounds interesting. Let me just see what I can throw together.
Yeah. So as a home brewer sitting in London in my kitchen, to begin with, it was all about reading. It was all about buying books. Mm. It was all about reading forums.
Listening to podcasts, right?
Listening to podcasts. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, of course.
That's a given.
You were going to say that. I'm sorry. I didn't interrupt. Yeah.
I was getting to that.
Yeah.
Do you follow him on Instagram?
Go ahead. Sorry.
You had to read books. That's right.
Read books, listen to podcasts, and then just experiment as much as possible, you know, within those recipes that I was doing, and understanding the nuances of different hops. And, you know, it was such a big learning curve. And that's why I still class myself as a homebrewer, you know, because that's kind of where I dug my teeth into it. And yeah, I love the fact that that's where I started. And actually now, you know, we have five brewers. We have six brewers, if you count me, at the brewery, and they're all educated through Harriet Watt or Vine Stefan, or they've gone to, you know, Siebel or whatever it might be. So I'm in awe of those guys. When we sit down and have brewery meetings, you know, now it's like, Christ, what are these guys talking about?
They know all the ingredients. They know about how much fans in each malt and all that stuff, right?
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah. But, you know, I'm still super creative, and we drive everything together as a team. Yeah. And my inspiration comes from a lot of food, you know, and a lot of desserts or a lot of cocktails. So implementing them into beer recipe is where I really come into it, I guess.
Another way to exercise your palate.
How do you go about doing that? So, you have, that's a perfect segue. I saw that you did a collaboration beer with our good friend Jamil over at Heretic.
He's a legend. He's such a lovely man. Yeah.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, we did. He is a good dude, and we brewed a wit called Peacher Man, and that was based on, you know, as you do with collaborations across many thousands of miles, you start emailing each other, okay, what should we do? And I just I don't know why, but I was just looking into some classic American desserts, and I saw the peach cobbler.
Oh God, yes, I love a peach cobbler.
I put it to Jamil. I was like, "Let's make the peach cobbler into a beer."
That's kind of weird.
So that was it.
Yeah. What did he say to that?
He was like, "Yeah, man, yeah, that's great." You know, we just chose a nice wit strain to go with, and then we chose the kind of infusions, and it was peach juice and puree and some vanilla pods and some, I think, lemon zest in there as well.
Yeah, check this. Tell me that doesn't sound good, Ted. Listen to this list for ingredients: okay, peaches, of course, toasted oats, lemon zest, sugar, bourbon, vanilla pods. Fermented out with a delicate Belgian wit ale strain to complement the fruit and the spice, and then dry hopped with Nelson Savin. Come on. Are you serious?
That sounds pretty darn good.
I can taste it in my mind already.
So is Bevo taking notes for what we're eating tonight? Barbecue and cobbler, Bevo.
So you came. Did you come out here and brew with him, or did he go over there?
No, he came over. He was on a trip over to the UK, so we hooked up. But I've been out to Heretic.
Cool.
One of the guys who works there actually went through UC Davis, and Charlie Bamforth, one of the great professors of brewing, the Pope of Foam, as he's called,
reached out to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he reached out. And anyway, John, this guy, he came over and he worked with us for 3 months. And then he went back and got a job at Heretic. So we've kept in touch.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's just,
that's really awesome. So how do you take a beer or take a dessert like a peach cobbler and layer it into a beer? I mean, you know, we read the ingredients, but I mean, it seems like if it's not done well, it could kind of be heavy lemon zest or heavy vanilla bean. And nobody really likes a super heavy either of those flavors, I would think. How do you approach that?
A lot of consideration, you know, into your ingredients. And we take a lot of time, whether we're doing, you know, whether you make a tea with some zest or you use the pods, or you might use some hops, just so you get a better understanding of what you're going to extract.
Yeah.
And again, it just comes down to flair and palate then, really, and training your palate and understanding what you're using, and then kind of brewing with conviction and going, you know what, this is going to turn out all right.
You have confidence and you just go for it.
Yeah, kind of, to your best of abilities and knowledge. And now that we're 4 years down the road, we've used a lot of infusions, we've used a lot of zests, for example, and now we kind of know ballpark figures of what we're gonna get, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Experience,
I suppose,
counts a lot for sure.
Yeah.
So, do people that drink the peach beer, are they familiar with the peach cobbler itself, or are they just drinking it sort of in a vacuum?
No,
I think they're. No, I guess I don't know. Actually, I haven't been into a bar yet and gone, "Hey guys, did you get what this is?"
Meant to be? You get the gist of this beer.
The reviews on it have been great, but we've done. If you take the style like a Berliner Weiss, we do a lot of Berliner Weisses throughout the season, throughout the year, and one of those, you know, the Berliner Weiss as a style is a great kind of background to infuse on. It's such a delicate malt base and delicate kind of starting block. So, for example, using Earl Grey tea and lemon zest. You know, I'm obsessed with lemon iced teas. You know, like, what do you call it in the States? Is it
Arnold Palmer?
Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, lemonade and iced tea.
Yeah.
That's it. So, making an Arnold Palmer into a beer. You know, how do you do that? And
How do you do it?
Well, yeah, you just kind of dry zest with, or dry hop or dry tea with Earl Grey, and you use some lemon zest in there, and you know the tartness of the Berliner Weiss itself lends itself really well, and all of a sudden you've got the most amazing alcoholic iced tea.
Are you one of those guys who goes around and like tastes everything and sniffs everything? Like, you'll be at a market and you can't leave the herb section for like 20 minutes because you're just smelling everything, or do you kind of inherently know what would be good? There's some people who have that. There's like foodies who kind of have that and parlay that into, you know, into their cooking, like chefs, right? But on the beer side, I think it's a little complex.
I'm a sniffer.
You're a sniffer.
I love sniffing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Me too.
Getting in there and just getting my nose in there and having a good old sniff.
What's your favorite smell? What's your favorite smell in this whole world of beer? It was a softball. Ooh, you gave
that's
to
a
me.
Weird,
I had,
creepy
I know,
question.
But I had to ask it because we were talking about smells, Bev.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I would ever go to... Yeah. That wouldn't be the question I would go to, but...
What do you like shoving your nose in?
Yeah.
Whoa, well, that's quite a personal question.
well, that's why I couched it in the beer world.
Oh,
because
that's
you were,
a good
you know,
one.
You
that
were in a couple bands.
One.
You were on tour. The God knows what you've smelled.
Oh, well, you know, I tried to keep it clean. It was a family show. I don't know, you know. I mean, there's so many times I walk in the brewery and go, oh, my God, what's that? And we could have just dumped some yeast with some dry hops in there, you know, that amazing kind of bio transformation that goes on between the two.
Yeah.
It might be sniffing a new kind of, you know, a Scotch whiskey barrel that we've got, and there's still like 3 liters in the bottom,
God.
That we're kind of draining out and drinking with the straw all day. You know, it's like, I don't know really. But then, yeah, definitely going around markets and sniffing and tasting. I even end up sniffing glasses of water. You know, you start spinning a glass of water. That's when you know you're mad.
Yeah. I like smelling fresh bags of potato chips.
Oh, unopened bags of potato chips.
No, unopened too, but you know, pop that first, you open it and you just kind of sniff it. And my wife always goes, what the fuck is wrong with you? I don't know. I'm smelling it, man. It smells good.
That's why you don't get potato chips at home.
That's why I don't get a lot of things at home.
I like smelling rubber as well. Have you ever smelled like fresh rubber? You know, when you open like a new basketball and you smell the ball? You ever do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't like that smell, but I know that smell.
Like walking into like a tire shop.
Yeah.
Or a newly printed book.
Do you prefer gasoline or diesel?
Gas.
Oh, I'm more of a diesel guy.
Yeah, that's too bad. We can't be friends
yet. Yeah, right.
Let's get back to the beer, Logan. I'm sorry. I went on a tangent. What beer should we drink next? I have this barrel-aged Sour Power. Should we crack that or save that for a little bit?
Do that. That's a wonderful beer. Again, this is another tangent that we've been able to go on. I've wanted to go into the kind of more wild critters and bacterias from day one, but we've always been kind of brewing and... we've always done everything in the same environment, I guess. And I've never had the confidence to breach into a more wild kind of program. Up until 18 months ago, we took on a separate warehouse
And so now we've got the perfect segregation. We've got a little brew area with my original kit, a six-barrel kit. We've got three stainless fermenters, and we've got about 200 barrels on the go, and we've got some fooders coming in. And now we get to go crazy and start learning on, you know, what is a completely different landscape of wild yeast and bacteria. So this beer, barrel-aged sour power, is basically... the primary fermentation was with a kind of DuPont strain, of a Saison strain, and it was infused with red currants and sour cherries. And then we barreled a half of that batch into Burgundy red wine barrels from France.
Oh, wow.
For about 18 months. And we put some Brett Lambicus, which is a lovely form of Brettanomyces. And 18 months, he went through this journey of being, you know, a bag of crap most of the time. And then 18 months later, you know, the bread had sorted itself out. The fruit was in a really nice place. Everything was just bang on. The character of the barrel was there. And so we packaged it. And it's a collaboration we did maybe 2 years ago now with Mikola and Arizona Wilderness, who are both good friends of ours.
Is that what happens a lot with those sour beers and the barrel programs, where you just kind of end up with a stinker until one day it turns around? Is that kind of normal?
I think it's all about faith in the yeast, you know, in the godly thing that is the yeast, and trusting it, you know, and tending, looking after it as best you can, giving it the right conditions, tending for its needs, I guess.
It's a baby. At what point do you call it? At what point do you go, this is a dumper. It's no way it's recovering.
Well, or do I mean, you as do I that? Say, we've got about 200 barrels on the go at the moment, and sensory of those barrels is key. So depending on what it is, you know, we may wait, you know, a month or two to even crack the barrel, to even take a little siphon of it to see where it's at.
Okay.
And then once you know that it's coming into a zone, then you know, you're constantly on top of it a little bit more, and until it's bang on and you're ready to go. I mean, with some barrels, we've got a couple from early on that perhaps didn't turn out right, but you know, their characteristics may be positive if they're blended. So we're not going to throw anything away as yet.
Keep that as an open possibility.
Yeah.
It'll happen one day, I'm sure.
If you don't dump beer, you're not a brewer.
There are occasions when you've got to dump, there's no doubt about that, which is fair enough, and you've got to make that call,
sure.
Which is heartbreaking, but you've got to do it.
But it's hard with sour, because they go south, and they go north and south all the time.
Yeah,
a couple of barrels might have a bit too much acetic going on, but you know that blended in with another beer may add a really nice kind of level within that beer, a nice kind of, a little tangent, I guess, of flavor and character. Mm-hmm.
How do you add did you add all the fruit into the barrel, or is this actual fruits that you put juice? How did you build this up?
Yeah, we basically use the red currants and sour cherries towards the end of the primary fermentation. Okay. So we dumped them in as the yeast was just finishing off, so that chewed through a bit of the sugar, left a bit of the character in there, and then we moved into the barrels, and I believe with that we added a little bit more fruit into the wood as well. Mm-hmm. As we went through the process. And that was it pretty much, because the character is great. I think that the kind of balance of the fruits and a little bit of the wine coming through, and that kind of sour coming through naturally, I think, from a little bit of the barrel, but also the fruit.
Yeah.
Right. It's very good.
Ted, what do you think about this beer, dude?
It's excellent.
It's really good, right?
Yeah, it's excellent. What the thing that I keep on hearing being described here, and I wonder if we miss out of this over in the States, many allusions to tea, and I'm curious if that develops the English palate in a different way than the Americans ever would, because the descriptions he's using, the words, the terminology, very different than what we'd use here in the States, but it's very direct and upfront. Like when we were talking about the peach cobbler and the things in there, you could taste the descriptions. And that's
really
just
could.
Something that was, it was not ostentatious. It was very direct, but it's something I've been paying attention to, and hearing all the terminology and all the descriptors he's used for all these beers, it makes sense, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't understand you guys half the time, so I'm glad I'm making sense.
Making perfect sense.
I'm joking.
We are
no,
simple.
It is. It's, I guess I don't, because I don't maybe come from like a trained background as well. I worked with a lot of great chefs, and I think when I was in my bands, to make money, because you don't make any money in music.
Same is true here for beer. I don't know how you're doing that.
I worked in a couple of events companies in London, and we worked with some great chefs. And just listening to them and their construction of recipe and their use of ingredients was, you know, was inspirational for me trying to apply that, I guess, to my beer. Mm-hmm. So it comes from a kind of natural, as you say, a kind of more tactile, more so than a scientific maybe background.
By the way, is there a Spurs specific beer for you guys?
Spurs?
Yeah, is there a Spurs specific beer for you guys? I'm looking at the website. I'm seeing Tottenham on the map, so I'm just curious if there is. If by proximity, you've got to have something. If you're like any American brewery, it would seem that there would be right in line with that.
The hometown,
right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no. I'm a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan.
Oh, okay.
There's the Charlie Bamford tie-in. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You got it. That's it. That's how me and Bamford became mates. It's a funny story, but I'll tell you another time. But yeah, Tottenham is they're up the road. Actually, they're building a new stadium, a massive new stadium, mm-hmm. And
wow.
Hopefully, this is the great thing. You can see they want to have maybe like 20% of the beer in the stadium to be craft beer.
Yeah,
wow,
which is a hell of a step for an English, soccer stadium.
Yeah.
to take that on board. But they've been over to the States a lot, the guys who are building it and the guys who are doing all the food and stuff and the drink. And they've been massively inspired by what they've seen in the US. So, hopefully we'll get some beer into the stadium, but I don't know if it's going to be a Tottenham specific. I think I'd cry if I had to do that.
Do you get any blowback? Do you see any blowback from people who are like big camera supporters or kind of steeped in the tradition? We're going down to the pub for pints of mild and ESBs and all this newfangled American style beers and American style food kind of coming over. Is that creating any waves or does it even really matter to you at all?
I think to camera, taking those guys in point. They are a very powerful beer ale organization with 180,000 members. I just wish they could be more proactive in caring about great beer instead of just cask beer,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they've got so much to offer as a group of enthusiasts and obsessives that I think if they just lent themselves to great kegged, ale. Yeah. It's exactly the same thing, it's just, I know that they have their definitions and they have to abide by that, but wouldn't it all be nice if we could just live under the same, in a nice world together?
Yeah. At some point, all of the definitions and the segmentation kind of gets old.
Yeah.
And kind of tiring.
The head there.
Yeah, and you're right. With a craft beer, it doesn't matter what style, needs to be taken care of properly and needs to be served properly. It doesn't matter if it's in a cask or not. Sure, cask beers probably require a little bit more attention than your normal kind of keg beers. But for the most part, it's all the same. It's all created with love. It's all created with attention. And let's promote everything. It's good for everybody.
Just promoting great ale, great beer in general is the key. And I think you've made another good point there about the serving of beer. That's key in the UK because, there's a lot of sellers out there. There's a lot, and I'm sure it's the same in the States. There's a lot of people who need help and education to better understand their lines, and cleaning their lines and dispense. Yeah. And basically, it's up to us as brewers to keep brewing great beer, and it's also up to the publicans or the bar managers to dispense great beer and look after it, Otherwise, Joe Bloggs, who's having a pint and it comes through dirty lines, is going to have, not such a great experience of his first craft beer, for example, and that's killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll kill your buzz real quick.
Well, kills the industry.
Yeah. Kills the industry, yeah.
Which is the worry, around here. Our publicans are in the same position here. They have a lot of control over what people drink and how much of it they get to drink. Depending on how knowledgeable the publican is, it's either a good bar or not so good bar.
Right. And usually they blame the brewery, not the pub.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Logan. Yeah, 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 totally. Even on pricing, we get blamed. And it's like, hang on, we sell our beer at a certain price. Right. It's up to the pub or the bar to sell it, but they want to sell it at.
That's education. We need to teach everybody a little bit more about what's happening. Logan,
do you know what that's... Sorry, go on.
No, you go ahead, please.
I was just saying that education is killer. It's absolutely essential. And that's what we're doing at the moment is, you know, for example, our sales team has grown recently. And now they're out on the street, you know, they're working with the accounts, they're giving them as much service as they can and giving them as much advice. Cause that's, you know, from a brewer's perspective to work with the accounts is absolutely essential. It's a big part of what we're doing at the moment.
That's awesome. Hang on a second. Let me take a break. If you want to hang out, Logan, for about 4 or 5 minutes, grab yourself another triple IPA or whatever you're drinking. And then we'll come back and talk more beer. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go and make a cup of tea.
That's nice. Milk or no milk?
Oh, no, just a squeeze of lemon.
There you go. All right. All right. Hang on a second, Logan. We'll be back with you in just a second. And then for those of you listening, it's The Session. We're hanging out with Logan from Beavertown Brewing over in the UK. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit FiveStarChemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the Five Star treatment today.
That's it. I've had it. I am never putting hops in my beer again.
What? Why?
It's just too ridiculous. Insane prices, stupid contracts, high shipping costs, crappy selection.
Dude, you need Nico Brew.
Nico Brew will rock your f***ing face right the f*** off your f***ing skull. $5 shipping to all 50 states, plus fantastic international rates get you low prices on Nico Brew's great selection of hops and more. Whether you're a home brewer, a pro brewer, or a homebrew shop owner, Nico Brew can get you the hops you need in increments big and small, single orders, spot buys, or full contracts. And there's only one place to join the uber special secret elite bare bones club where you'll get the best deals anywhere.
Holy f***ing shit!
NicoBrew.com. NikoBrew. Nico Brew, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
For more than 20 years, White Labs has collected yeast strains from around the world and kept them locked away. Until now. Through the Yeast Vault, they are now releasing new, creative, and unique strains. Most have never been used in commercial products. Some have names you can barely pronounce. And all are uniquely White Labs in quality and performance. Now they're giving you the opportunity to unlock the vault. Here's how it works. Pick the yeast you want from the vault. As soon as 500 people have chosen that yeast, your card will be charged and your yeast will go into production. A short time later, a fresh White Labs Pure Pitch package will show up at your door, ready to make the beer you've always wanted to brew. For the first time, White Labs is letting you into their secret yeast vault, unlocking access to hundreds of strains never available before. Join the White Labs Customer Club for first access to the vault. If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer. You're tuned into The Session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right. Thanks for hanging out, everyone.
You're still welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Before we get back to Logan here, I do want to tell you guys what's happening at the AHA.
What's happening at the AHA?
The American Homebrew Association. Well, they're having a membership drive, Warren.
Oh.
They have a special offer, actually, for the Brewing Network listeners. You can join or renew your AHA membership in June and receive 6 ounces of Mosaic hops from BSG free with your membership. Just visit homebrewersassociation.org and use code BNAHA or, as you so eloquently pointed out the other day, Banaha.
I did say that.
Yeah.
If I renew, let's see, about 50 times, will I get 6 ounces times 50 in order to do a batch at the brewpub?
If you pay for 50 years of AHA, assuming you'll live that long, I think they would send it to you. They would have to, I guess.
Yeah, is it six ounces per year?
One renewal?
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Let's get Gary on the phone right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, offer ends June 30th or while supplies last. Visit homebrewersassociation.org and use code BANAHA. That's BNAHA. Pretty fascinating stuff. Look at that.
Yeah. Do it.
All right, let's talk to Logan again. Logan, you still there, buddy? You fall asleep?
No, I've just been tending my tea bags.
that's what LeBron does.
That's playing for something over there, I think.
I don't know what you're on about.
What beer should we drink, man? How about this neck oil?
Yeah, neck oil is...
should we crack that?
Okay, so it's a session IPA, 4.3%. It's got a great story, actually, the neck oil. It's a great term from where I'm from in the West Midlands in England. It's a term that my great granddad used to say when he was going down the pub for a pint after work. He'd shout up to his wife and he'd say, "I'm going down the pub for a pint of neck oil," to basically oil his neck, you know.
Right. That's funny.
And my dad used to tell me the story about it, and I just thought, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, "Well, that's a great name for a beer." As soon as I opened the brewery, one of those beers was going to be neck oil, and it was going to be something that was sessionable and quaffable. And actually, it was one of the earlier brews that I was messing around with, but originally it was a best bitter, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I was trying to recreate this beer that I used to drink when I was back in the day, you know, with my friends when I was 18 or 19. And I could never get it. So I just twisted it on its head, stripped back the malt bill, kept it real pale, and then loaded it with a lot of, what are we using in there? It's like, I think there's some Amarillo, Mosaic, Galaxy, and Vic Secret. So pretty tropical, kind of papyri, mango-y on the nose, and then just real dry and crisp.
Yeah, totally. Wow. Wait, what was the last set of hops that you put in? Victoria's Secret?
So Vic Secret from Australia and Galaxy, those two, which is a nice combo. And then the Amarillo and some Mosaic as well. I think there's a little bit of Centennial and Simcoe in the actual boil itself as well.
Tasty, what do you think about that?
Very good. Combo. I love the body, and it's a good job on a, well, you can call it a session beer. I'll call it that too.
Yeah, that's it. It's 4.3. It's just something you can sit on all day. It's kind of like, I guess, our, I don't know, for a better word, like a stepping stone beer. Yeah. You know, I think it's really important to appeal to people who maybe are, you know, not as savvy into their beer styles or into craft beer, and maybe they're still looking to make that move away from, you know, kind of fizzy, carbonated, mass-produced, you know, crap into drinking something that's great. Neckel just, you know, it fits. It's just light. It's crisp. It's got great aroma. It's just, you know, thirst quenching and just a great thing to sit on. So
I think Tasty.
Yeah, it's kind of.
I think Tasty was keyed in on something. It's, I think it's the body.
A lot of body.
To me, that puts.
I think
together.
You're getting that from like layering of the hops. You got 8 different hops in this beer, which I think gives you two things. One, it gives you like hop body, and it also gives you options. When you can't get at one of them, you still got the other 7.
Yeah. Well, that's to bear in mind as well with hop contracts. Sure. God, yeah. that's another ball ache. But
we got that problem here too.
Yeah, no, we use a little bit of I think we use some carapils in there just to open the body up and leave a little bit of residual sweetness.
You mash high,
and then we mash in quite high, high temperature.
Nice.
Yeah,
you got the right idea. You're getting it. It works. I can taste it in the beer.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Is there a certain country that's easier to get hops from between getting hops from the U.S. and Australia and New Zealand? Have you found one that is a lot easier than the others?
No, it's all a pain in the ass.
Okay, yeah. So same over here.
Yeah. Makes it easy.
Yeah.
But good.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we don't. We have done, but we don't at the moment use any British hops, even though they are wonderful in certain types of beers. I just feel they don't suit the style of beers that we're brewing or that I'd like to brew at the moment. As I said in the beginning, it was really hard to try and grab some hops that would make a difference, that I wanted to make a difference, like Citra, Amarillo, you know, whether it was Centennial or Simcoe or now Mosaic and Equinox, or what do we have to call that now, like 366 again?
Or did they change that?
Yeah, they were going to get sued, I think, by a brewery, I think, called Equinox Brewing or something.
They changed the name.
I don't know.
Oh.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. I don't think I said that.
No, we'll edit it out in post. It'll be weird.
Hey, guys, guess what I heard Logan say?
Yeah. Whoopsie. So now, I mean, we've kind of... we've grown as a brewery, and obviously hops to our core range are pretty important. I think 5 out of the 6 beers we do are hop dominated, dry hopped as well. So yeah, we've had to work hard on our relationships with the hop farmers, the growers, and contract for, you know, a good 5 years into the future, you know, to try and nail down some volumes. I was in Yakima last year actually for selection, which was an amazing experience.
Oh, nice.
I could spend weeks there just sniffing.
Well, that's what you do. You wouldn't be out of place. I'll tell you that.
I don't know. I think I might have grown a third nostril when I was there. The amount of kind of hops I was sticking my noses into. And I've got allergies as well. I was just a sucker for punishment.
Oh, man. Look at you. Staying up late here. Getting allergies over there, dude. You are all over it.
Rock and roll, man.
Ted, let's look at, do me a favor, sip this or smell your glass.
Mm-hmm.
What do you get? Describe this beer to me. Working on Ted's, some tasting notes for Ted here, so let's see how Ted's doing so far.
Working on tasting notes so
far.
Right.
Yeah. Trying to improve his palate, his range.
First thing I get there, I mean, I do get some fruit forward smells.
Yeah.
That'd be the first thing I try and identify. As I look through this as well, I try to... I mean, you do get a little bit... I mean, it definitely has things that I would say are akin to the classic American styles of the session.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What's the exact question you're asking me?
I just want to hear your opinion on it.
Well, the
I just
beer
want you to throw,
good.
Throw out descriptors. That's all.
Descriptors, yeah. I mean, I get a little bit of a fruit forward there with the nose. It was easy on the palate. It, like you guys were alluding to, I thought the body was really good. I thought it had a lot to it as opposed to some sessions with which are thin.
They're
this
thinner.
Did not have this at all. It actually it had good mouthfeel. It felt like I was drinking something, which I think is a problem that you run into with a lot of sessions, is that it tastes watery. This was not watery. This had a very forward mouthfeel, which I liked.
Yeah, I agree.
But, yeah, I mean, it was I like it. I would drink a lot more of this if I was given the opportunity.
You got a future in radio. Anyone ever tell you that, Ted?
It's been brought up, but then they laugh at me.
Right. Hey, Logan, real fast about your going back a little bit to your homebrewing careers. Do you approach beers differently now when you're sitting around with the folks at the brewery trying to design a recipe? You're talking about beer. Is it a different approach now than when you were a home brewer? Maybe as far as I don't know, you have to sell this this beer eventually, and people actually have to purchase it and drink it, or an ingredient issue, or is that an issue at all? You kind of just throw whatever at the wall and see what sticks.
No, I think the consideration, as mentioned before, is key. Like, you've really got to understand what you're trying to achieve from the beginning, whether it's a concept within a beer like the peach cobbler, or whether you're really trying to nail that hop experience, and extract and as much of the that kind of bio transformation, the aromas, the mouthfeels, like you were talking about before, those kind of layers of flavor that you can get from multiple dry hops, for example. We consider a lot. We sit around and we talk, and as I say, a lot of the guys, they come with great experience now and education, which is wonderful. So they can tell me exactly what the hell I'm on about, which is nice. I'm always going on about, the levels here and the little spikes here, I want to, experience this, and how do we do that? And they help me bring it to life, which is great. It's very much a kind of collaborative effort.
Yeah.
But then it's just ensuring from start to finish that we nail it as a process and we nail it as a package,
Yeah. Well, it's got to take a lot of pressure off, too, to have such a staff that you can rely on. I think a lot of breweries here, Tasty, you talk to more people than I do. It seems like it's one or two man shows.
They have limited sensory panel. If it's just the brewer and his assistant, you got four or five people that you trust their palates. Definitely, that's an advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you think...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you guys are talking about there is key. Within our team, I think there's about 43 of us now at the brewery. There was like 9 of us when we moved there 2 years ago. So it's been a pretty fast people expansion as well as a kind of capacity expansion. And the people, within that kind of culture of the brewery are key, to everything that we do, So, the one thing I say is that we're all leaders, it's not just me, it's not, it's not Jen, the head brewer, it's not Nick who does all our creative direction or the sales guys, everybody makes their mark on that final product during the day. And that's key. So that kind of mindset within the brewery is an involvement of everybody, makes for a better workplace. And I think makes for a productive workplace and a great place to just, come to work every day.
Yeah.
And hopefully the guys like that too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I like that idea that everybody is involved and there's not, there might be a title hierarchy, but it doesn't sound like there's an idea hierarchy, if that makes a lot of sense. Everyone's ideas are valid and they're helping to make the beer. And I think it shows with the level of creativity that you have with your, you have a wide range of beers for being 4 years old.
Yeah, that's it. Of course, there's lines within, the book stops with me, I guess, which is nice. And I want to keep it that way. I'm very fortunate that it's just me and my wife that, are involved at that level. So it's nice to be able to kind of fulfill a dream and a vision, which is great. And to have that flexibility, I think, in this marketplace, in the craft marketplace, and not to be, run by accountants or whatever it might be, it's an amazing freedom.
To you in 10 years when you are run by accountants, because you're that big that you need to be run by accountants. But by then you'll have your own island in Bali or something.
Yeah.
That'll be great. What should we drink next? I see in the notes here you had mentioned either the espresso or Hyde, and that's like a representation of, you know, two of probably eight beers that we have left to choose from. So what do you think we should drink next?
Do you know what? Why don't you go? Because those are two big stouts. Why don't you finish with one of them? Why don't you try the have you got the Jekyll?
Yes, we do.
I don't know. You got it on ice? I don't know. But
yeah.
This is another really interesting beer that's come out of our Tempest project, which is our barrel program. And this is another kind of a beer that was primary fermented with a Duvel yeast strain, actually a Belgian style yeast strain, and then transferred into Muscat barrels for 9 months.
Oh, geez.
Where it was conditioned on gooseberries and some, I think it was Brett Klaus Senii, I think we used in that one.
Okay.
So loads of fruit character coming forward, loads of like sour coming from the gooseberries. Yeah, give it a go and see what you think. And I think the Muscat is there as well, delicately.
I'm pouring that. So that's a thick beer. While I hand the glasses to the guys, tell me about the label art. That's one thing that's blown me away about your brewery. Your label art is amazing.
It is. Nick Dwyer is our creative director, and you know, I was very lucky to have met this young man. He's quite a character, and he used to be waiting tables at Duke's Brew and Q at our restaurant.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I used to be brewing in the kitchen in the day, and then he used to come in for his shift on the afternoon. But he'd always have his little sketch pad there, and he'd always be doing his illustrations and doodling away. And at that time, I really wanted to, because we were doing a lot of experimental stuff, I wanted to use, you know, almost like individual artists for each beer.
Yeah.
To add another layer to that and bring the beer to life. And then seeing Nick, it was just like, oh my God, you know, you do everything that I love. It's psychedelic. It's Day of the Dead. It's skeletons. It's like Mars Attacks. It's sci-fi. You know, there's everything there, which is, so as soon as I could, as soon as we could afford to bring him on full time, he became a kind of Mr. Creation. So yeah, he's pivotal to us, you know, a beer, when you walk into a shop and there's 1,000 beers in front of you, you want it to stand out. You know, you want people to go, oh, what's that? And Nick does that for us amazingly. And then people drink the beer and they go, fuck, this is great. You know, not only does it look cool, but it tastes awesome too.
That's what I'm thinking too, man. It's very, very psychedelic, very rock and roll, very, I don't know, just kind of out of the norm, which I think is, I think kind of fits your beers anyways.
And that was without anybody taking any LSD, which is great.
Just wait. You're just
I don't know how we do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wait. Like I said, in 10 years, when Nick's running out of creative juice, he's like, man, I need to start dosing again.
Actually, you know what? He's a force as well. Like we'll talk about ideas. Maybe I'll write to him about a kind of concept for a label or whatever. And literally he'll come up with it within, you know, an hour or two. It'll be, you know, on my desk, basically. He's a notorious in his production, and he defines what we are, you know, from the packaging, I guess.
Yeah, well, and label art is so, I think, underappreciated in the beer world, and I think a lot of people don't spend as much time as they should on how their label comes across, how it elevates their brand, and I don't know, the first thing I saw about your beer was the label, and it stuck with me ever since. I think when Phil mentioned you guys, I looked you up online, and all your artwork has stuck with me for like 3 years until this point. Then I can actually talk to you and drink the beers, and it's I don't know, it's really cool. It doesn't happen a lot. It doesn't happen a lot.
Well, like you said, it's the first experience, isn't it? That the public get is you know the physical look and feel of the can or the bottle.
Yes.
You know, and that's, you want to hook people in straight away. And, you know, I'm no kind of marketing genius, but I know what I like, and I like to be kind of stimulated straight away. So we were lucky. And I think in the UK, again, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and even now, a lot of the old regional brewers, a lot of the family brewers, a lot of the old school brewers, they don't, you know, there's no consideration or care into maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's what they like, but I just think you can be a lot more creative, not just with your brewing, but with the look and feel of the product.
Are they trying to be more traditional, maybe, and kind of step away from the you know, sort of new school folks like you that are coming up?
No, I think they're just being themselves, and that's something that they've always been from 19, you know, 70 or whenever, you know, or mm-hmm. whenever they started, you know, it's just, it is what it is and it suits them and that's fine. But yeah. for me, it was, you know, I wanted to be, again, kind of representational and honest to what I like. And Nick did that, which is great.
Yeah, he nailed it, man.
Do you think, because each label is pretty unique, do you think the kind of brand recognition, you're still able to maintain brand recognition across each different brand? Like, people just know, looking on the shelves, so much is so homogenized that when they see a couple labels that are next to each other that are different, they're like, oh, that's the Beavertown.
Yeah, that's definitely happening. Okay. People get sick and tired of our skeletons, which is great. Nick, somebody was like, oh, not Nick Dwyer and another incessant bunch of skeletons on the label. You know, it was on social media somewhere, and I was like, Nick, is that your dad writing to you? What's going on?
It's like, yeah, no, I told him to stop.
It's definitely defined, I think, Beavertown. People yeah. know it straight away. And particularly, there's a beer there called Gamma Ray, which is our kind of biggest selling beer. It's an American pale ale. And it's very colorful. And it's got that kind of Mars Attacks kind of, you know, spacemen that are being blown up. And that is our kind of figurehead, you know, those guys, that spaceman, those dudes, you know, people recognize hand in hand. It's Beavertown now, which is great. I really like that.
How many of these guys do you have tattooed on you?
none yet, actually, but I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. Right on the forehead. Just right. I think right
only
there.
Face left.
Yeah. I think it'll really set you apart from everybody else who doesn't have a face tattoo in the beer industry.
Do you know that? There are people starting to get Nick's designs tattooed, and they come up to us at festivals and they're like, oh, look on my leg, or look on my back, or can you sign this or something? It's like, whoa. That's a big thing to do. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
Did you ever get that kind of recognition being in music?
No.
I mean, I didn't mean that like...
No, you're a real rock star.
Yeah, I didn't mean that as like a snark, but I don't know. To me, it'd be kind of a trip, right, to go from an industry where that's kind of... We celebrate musicians and culture, and then to go from that to being a brewer to having people ask for your autograph. I think that'd be kind of a weird... I don't know. That would give me a weird feeling. I'd be like, oh, that's kind of cool. That I didn't really expect this level of recognition where people are coming up to me asking me for my autograph.
Yeah, no, I agree. Being a brewer, and I never thought it would be like this. It does feel a bit like being a front man in a band, which is what I was, and now I am like Mr. Beaver, the ambassador of Beavertown, and you know, I do a lot of events. I think it's really important to get out there and spread the good word and talk to people face to face with a beer in hand. I think that's absolutely killer, and it does feel a bit like being on a stage, you know.
Yeah,
and I really like it because, you know, it's my baby and it's an honest representation of what's in my head, and it's an easy thing to do, you know, and you know, drinking beer is, as I said in the beginning, it's one of the best things to do in the world. You know, it's a very social form of kicking back and having fun.
How do you see the craft beer culture in the UK in 10 years?
Massive. I think it's got a long way to go. I think craft beer is about 2% of the market in the UK. I think ale itself, as in real ale, is maybe 18 or 19%. But of that, craft beer is, yeah, maybe a couple of percent. So, yeah, we're a nation that was brought up on ale, and I think it's just, I mean, the way that we've grown, for example, as a brewery, 2 years ago, we moved to our new site in Tottenham, and I think we brewed 1,000 hectolitres. And then this year we'll brew like 35,000. So in 2 years we've grown, you know, it's been quite a step. And that is representational of, I think, a lot of breweries in the UK, a lot of craft breweries are growing at a rate of knots because, as I say, you know, the market is there, the drinker is growing, their palate is changing. And now, you know, we have massive pub estates, you know, you know, thousands and thousands of pubs. And a lot of them, you know, even if they're big family kind of, you know, where, you know, maybe like, I don't know, a regional brewery owns 400 pubs, they're now looking to bring in craft beer, which is great. You know, people are demanding it.
Well, that's good for you. All right,
it's great for everyone. I mean, you know, there's a lot of US breweries who are exporting now to the UK, which is good. It's great for the market as well. Every market is kicking off around us. Sweden is great. Norway, Italy is amazing brewers. Germany's kicking off. Ireland.
Wow. This whole thing's it might catch on, Warren. This whole craft beer thing might be a way to
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Nobody's looking behind them, basically. Everyone's looking forward and pushing forward to improve what we're doing. And you know, the investment that goes into that is massive, you know, not just financially, but mentally and energy-wise. So,
forget about it.
It feels like we're part of a movement and we're making a difference. And particularly in the UK, the brewing industry is, you know, it's 1,000 years old. It feels like we're making a change. You know, it feels like there's a new horizon, and
that's cool.
It's really exciting.
Yeah, that's got to be a cool feeling. So I have a final question for you, Logan, and we'll let you go. It's one I posed to Charlie Bamforth last time he was on the show, and it's very important to me. It's not a joke. This is very serious. Will Jurgen Klopp ever bring Liverpool? Will ever bring the cup home to Liverpool? I need to know this. Charlie just keeps deflecting and going to Wolverhampton, and I don't care. I just need to know. I just need to know my question.
Was that
go
English?
Ahead, please?
Yeah. Was that English? Yeah, yes. I think it was.
Go ahead, please answer. Yeah. Answer very seriously right now.
Okay, Jurgen Klopp, great man, motivator. I think he knocked out a couple of great results towards the end of the season, and I think he's definitely going to bring the silverware back to Liverpool.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking this very seriously.
Not the league, but you might win some, like, I don't know, dodgy Coca-Cola cup or something.
You're right, for sure.
So you're not going to get a trophy. You'll get a fork, knife, and spoon.
Yeah, for sure.
And a can of Coke.
Right. And a can of Beavertown. Actually, we do have a question from the chat room. There's a few people in the chat who want to know what band you were in.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, so the first one was called the BCBs, as in BCB.
Okay.
And the second one was called Sons of Albion, which was more... The BCBs was like a psychedelic garage rock band from like the mid-60s. And then the Sons of Albion was more of a kind of alternative grunge inspired by like Stone Temple Pilots and Alice in Chains and people like that.
Oh, that's cool. Are any of them still around, or your leaving left such a vacuum that they both imploded?
They did, but they tried to carry on. And they decided to go and get a proper job.
And they're now serving ribs at my barbecue. I don't know. I'm just kidding. Logan.
Nah, they're all doing great things on their own. Actually.
Oh, for sure. Man, I can't express enough how great you've been to us. Not only are you up till God knows how long, how early in the morning over there, but you sent a ton of beer. And I really appreciate you hanging out with us. The beer was great, and we had a great time.
It's been a pleasure, guys. Yeah, you know, keep up the good work. I'll keep on listening to the podcast my end. And, you know, never surrender.
Yeah, for sure, man. Hey, you too. I don't know. But when you come out in the States next time, swing by. Come in the studio. We'd love to have you in.
I'd love to. Yeah. I'll bear that in mind. Thank you.
Please do. All right, Logan. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Sometimes I'm so awkward.
Yeah.
Hey,
and whenever you want to chat,
then let me just
call me.
Hit me up.
You have my number.
I am me, Brock. It'd be great. IRL.
Sounds fine to me.
Yeah.
I feel like this is how the entire interview went on my end. It was like this. Guys, give me that attempt, because I kind of the beer.
I think you did great.
For the car, because it's fun.
Except when you asked him about smells. I thought that was weird.
Well, I'm a weird guy.
And soccer. I didn't understand half of what you said.
That's all right.
Well, that's just because you don't care about soccer.
Or anything. I felt like, you know, anyone ever play The Sims? Like The Sims game? Like Sim, you know, where you're a Sim?
Yeah. And I usually quit after like 30 minutes because I get annoyed.
I felt like that's how Sims sound. They go, Glorgensparg, Norf, Norf, Norf.
Right.
That's how, right, yeah. Ted?
I've never played The Sims.
No?
No.
That sounds like
He's
the Norwegian edition.
God damn it, Ted.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hey, remember your old friend, Ted?
My close personal friend.
Your former close personal friend.
Yeah. Well, now I know why you never join me on The Sims. I'm always waiting for you.
I was, well, you know what?
I got
away from video games because I was too busy drinking with my friends.
Priorities.
You should go back to not having any friends like me. So all I do is play video games. It's amazing.
I mean, all I do is not hang out with my friends enough.
Right.
I drink alone.
Well, now you got two kids, right? Two kids, two a wife, kids. And like eight jobs.
Yeah, well, right now it's only five, but yeah.
Okay. Five. But you're trying.
I'm trying.
So what are you doing in your free time?
right. A variation of what's been happening in this room.
Okay. All right.
Oh, man, this Sour Power, if you look very carefully, kind of looks... I don't know.
You can actually see the heartburn radiating off
of it. You can see it. Yeah, that's what the skeleton's doing. He has a bunch of heartburn.
He used to have skin.
I like their labels, man. That was cool. Yeah. I like the guy. He seems like a nice dude. Beer's great. We have a shit ton of it left.
Good thing.
Yeah. It's a good thing. we're going to take a break here real fast, but before we do... I should make Ted read the fucking...
Oh, yeah, you should. Oh, man.
Do you want me to do it in a big radio voice?
I do, but...
And we should record it.
But it's bullet-pointed, so you have to kind of, like, fill in points. Like, you want to try to just go for it?
Pre-run?
No.
Does he know what he's getting into?
No, pop his cherry.
Yeah, so...
Throw in some blorgen.
Come here.
Blorgen, shorgen.
Blorgen, shorgen.
Put on your glasses. Do you have glasses?
I do not have glasses.
Adam and Eve, that one, all that right there, be fine.
Don't read ahead.
Is this a segment brought to us by Adam and Eve?
Yeah, this is a live read for Adam and Eve.
This segment brought to you by Adam and Eve. Go to adamandeve.com for a limited time only. You'll get 50% off just about any item. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive three free adult DVDs plus a free exclusive gift. And to top it all off, they will even throw in free shipping on your entire order. Exclusive gift, clit bumper. It's the ideal pressure ring for couples, right, JP? He'll love the way this ring lets him stay harder longer, increases the strength of orgasm. She'll love the way the pleasure rubs thrill her sweet spots. Unique bumper stimulates her clitoris, soft and stretchy for a comfortable fit. It's made of premium silicone. That's premium. It's waterproof and it's compatible with all water-based lubes. AdamandEve.com and use code BNARMY at checkout. That's Let me try that again. That's BNARMY at AdamandEve.com. Use code BNARMY at AdamandEve.com. Is that good?
Very good.
Wow, what a professional.
Very good.
Wow.
Sixth job now, yeah.
Yeah. How did he get through that without snickering or anything?
Yeah, without making dick jokes. I don't know. I don't know. We definitely never do an Adam and Eve live read that quickly because we're always making jokes.
Well, I mean, they present themselves.
Yeah. Oh, no, and they love it. I mean, they're like, they go, just do whatever you want. It's fine. So we'll sit 5 minutes waxing poetic about clip
bumpers. I'm sorry, do you need me to do it again?
No, you did great.
Okay.
I noticed you went for the optional pronunciation clitoris.
Well, yeah, because
I say clitoris.
I say both, actually. I used to have a car, a Ford Taurus.
Okay.
And
okay.
My friends called it the clit.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So that's what came out. That's what I remember.
Hey, man, you go with what you know.
Apparently.
All right, friends, we're going to take a quick break. Are we eating, Bev?
I wasn't sure if you wanted to eat mid or after, but we will not be eating on this break.
Okay. So then we'll be right back. It's the session. Hang tight.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
With over 20 years of experience making world-class craft beer and more than 100 gold medals in international competitions, Moylan's Brewing Company is not just a pretty face in craft beer. Just ask Brendan Moylan.
What do we got here? The beer of the hour. Moylan's, gotta love that big M. It's like a sign of awesomeness. Woo-hoo! It's got an extra kick to it. Let's pour this bad boy. Oh, Moylan's. The end of the night when the kids are finally in bed, the wife's in bed, nobody's bothering your ass anymore. That's Moylan's time. Moylan's is for you.
Yeah!
It's to help you out.
Yeah.
It helps me out.
What?
Well, because it's freaking awesome. Northern California brewed. It's brewed with love.
With love?
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous.
And it's always best where?
Moylan's.
You gotta try it on tap at Moylan's.
in Novato. They're friggin' awesome. Not only because I own the brewery, because I love the beer.
Cheers!
Boom!
Kilt Lifter Scotch Ale takes big beers to a whole new level with rich malt balanced perfectly with delicate hops, and now comes in four-pack tall boy cans so you can take the party on the go. Or come to the brewery, take a tour, and try any of Moylan's fresh creations right from the source. Check them out at Moylan's.com.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from thebrewingnetwork.com. Army, have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts, monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983. Tampa Bay has become a great destination for craft beer lovers with more than 60 breweries and counting, like Cigar City, Tampa Bay, and Coppertail Brewing. One of the newest breweries is Four Stacks Brewing Company in Apollo Beach. Four Stacks believes that the West Coast can't have all the fun. So while we feature West Coast beer like Stone, Ballast Point, and Green Flash on tap, we also brew hopped up ales to our liking in the West Coast style, even as they're truly Florida. Come in and see for yourself. Four Stacks hosts monthly homebrew club meetings, bottle shares, and partners with local restaurants for free food delivery while you enjoy your pint in their new tap room. Stop by Four Stacks Brewing and support the greater Tampa Bay craft beer scene at a brand new community-oriented independent brewery. Four Stacks Brewing, bringing the best of the West Coast style and attitude. Four Stacks Brewing Company in Apollo Beach, Florida.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
All right, thanks for hanging out, everybody. Looking through my notes, I forgot to ask Logan. He, apparently at the... I don't know if it's a tasting room at the barbecue joint. They make Bloody Marys with their smoked porter, and they call it. It's called Smog Rocket, I guess. Smog Rocket Bloody IPAs or Bloody Marys. Yeah, Bloody Marys.
Huh,
Warren? Does that sound good to you? A Bloody Mary with smoked porter?
I don't like tomato juice. I don't like tomato juice. So no, thank you.
Fuck you,
Beverly Heartburn tomato juice. No.
No, heartburn is fine. No, I like Bloody Marys.
Okay, because I know a lot of people with tomato juice, it's a no-no.
It's just sour.
Because I get mad heartburn, so I stay away from them. Even though I enjoy them, I stay away from them. But I feel like I personally fund the heartburn over-the-counter medications. Well,
something I've learned about myself is that the drunker I am, the more I can tolerate sour things. So if that Bloody Mary has a lot of vodka in it, we're going to be fine.
I like that.
We're going to be all right.
I like that.
We're going to be just fine. Okay.
Which is why I can have sour beers after I've been heavily drinking.
There it is.
I want you guys to try the smoked porter.
I did want to try it. I was hoping that we got some.
We did. So I will be honest with you. I did open a can of smoked porter at my house the other night. I had to have one in advance because I like, you know, I like smoked beers and I like porters.
All right, Scott.
I had to, wow. I will I will take your money.
What money?
Exactly. By the way, Tasty had to leave. He's not feeling well. He came in. He looked green as hell, man. He did not look good.
No.
I'm going to bail out of him. Week.
So one, he was going to help me with the NHC recap, which is what we got to do right now. So
he did. By leaving.
So now it's up to you, Bev.
I can do this.
Talk about Baltimore, man. How was that? You want to come in here? No, you're doing shit.
No.
In there, yeah.
Well, am I? No. But I'll stay here.
She's got right. Shit in her cart on Target.com. So.
That's true.
No, I'm on Trulia.
What is that? Is that moving. Like real estate.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So how was Baltimore? Baltimore is an interesting city. It is.
Is it different than the last time we were there?
I've never been there.
Never mind then. Is it different than the last time I was there? Yeah. I thought you went with me, but apparently that was pre-BN.
No, that was a different, very nice brunette girl that you went with.
That's very presumptive of you.
I'm just saying I'm a very nice brunette girl, so you're confusing me with someone.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow.
Good joke.
I was referring to it as Oakland with history.
Oh,
okay.
Because that's something I can understand.
It was super historical and cool, but it was hood as crap.
Really?
Yeah. And
even down there by the water.
It varied from street to street. So down by the water was beautiful, but walking to the water, like a block from the harbor area, I was walking with Doc and Push, and this not very nice man just started screaming at Doc, and it was a little scary.
At Doc?
At Doc.
Because he was
like
the shortest one.
Right. Like, in a very threatening manner, like saying he was going to do all these things. And we were having like a conversation between the three of us, but nobody even looked at him. He just started yelling, and then we acknowledged that he was there.
Wow.
And it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. I went and had lunch at this seafood place by myself because I got there before everybody. And decided, it's the middle of the day. It'll be fine. I'll walk back myself.
Yeah, there's plenty of daylight. Daylight is safe.
Right. Daylight is safe. And, and there was the harbor, and there were all these upscale hotels. I was like, it's cool.
And you're blinding at 1 p.m.
Right.
Because of the sun reflecting off of my white?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good joke, Warren.
Thanks.
So
she's right. It was a good joke.
I thought so.
It was pretty good.
The wife's one in here. Right.
So first of all, GPS, like when you're walking, it can't find you.
Can't find you like me?
I got lost.
You got lost.
She gone.
I got lost and I ended up.
Bye, Felicia.
Oh, God. I ended up and I had 2% left on my phone.
No.
I got lost and I ended up on a street that we had a bartender at our hotel who ended up explaining to me that there's this whole area of Baltimore that's referred to as the Strip. Because I was like, I ended up on this street and there was nothing but strip clubs there. And she's like, oh. And I was like, it was fine. I just walked by quickly.
It's the Strip because you get stripped down walking through the neighborhood. Give me your shoes.
I don't know what happened.
Give me your pants.
It was fine. There was like one time where it was not comfortable, but other than that, I thought it was a cool city.
No. Are you sure that your phone actually charges over 2%? Because I think every time you tell a story, it's always somewhere in there is my phone was at 2%.
Well, my phone is at 5% right now.
Oh, okay.
But it's because I am attached to it constantly, so I just kill it.
Right. Sorry, go ahead, Ted.
I was going to say, are people still talking about the Serial podcast there?
The Serial podcast?
Oh,
do you never listen to Serial?
Come on.
You're like the only person that...
No. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I don't listen to... I only listen to Ears Up. I really don't.
I shouldn't have asked this then.
I haven't really jumped onto the podcast bandwagon.
Yeah, that's all right. It's
I don't have a commute anymore, so I have no need to.
Yeah, you do.
JP, you so, only see
so why
I'm
listen
to
anything?
Yes,
there, right?
Yes, I do. Yes,
okay.
Serial was a widely popular podcast.
Okay, now I know what you're talking about.
One of the most popular podcasts.
Yeah,
I think ever.
I think it's the most popular ever. Yeah,
sure. I think so too. Yeah. But
hey,
nice try, Teddy.
Swing and a miss.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's on me.
But it was a good cut.
I tried. Yeah.
So how were the, I don't know, how was actually the conference?
The conference.
Was it good time, bad time,
fun time? I had a fine time. Yeah. I had a great time. I I don't want to say anything bad.
Well, no, of course not. But I mean, like, you know, we do this every year.
I know.
You know, how were the people? Was everybody nice?
Everybody
how was the
beer? So nice. I will say that. Everybody involved in the beer scene, almost everybody in Baltimore, every Uber driver I communicated with, everybody is very polite, very nice.
Club night was a little weird. Yeah, you know I'm talking about the homebrewers, right? I don't give a shit about the fucking Uber driver.
Oh, well, the homebrewers are the same guys we see every year. So, yeah, they were nice.
All right.
How was BNA 11?
BNA 11 was fantastic.
What happened?
The buses functioned.
Oh, really?
They did their job.
Were they on time?
They were on time. They circled.
So we have a roving anniversary party, and it happens whatever city the National Homebrewers Conference is. And usually there's always a big cock-up. Last year, the buses decided
They decided
that they weren't running anymore halfway through our event. And so they weren't picking people up, and they weren't dropping people off, and they just weren't around.
And part of what we tell people when we sell them a ticket is we provide transportation.
Oh. Yeah. And it was in San Diego. It was like a 15-minute bus ride back to the hotel.
And they, I mean, it was bad from the beginning.
It was crazy, dude.
They started not dropping people off at the venue. They were dropping them off like 6 blocks away and making them walk. They wouldn't turn down onto the pier where it was. It was a whole hot mess.
Yeah, but not here.
No, this place was fantastic.
Really?
All the bus drivers, we had yellow school buses.
Okay.
None of the drivers were drunk.
Oh, jeez.
Which was nice.
That's good.
A change for us with school buses.
Right.
They did their job. It was fantastic. The venue was super cool.
Yeah.
I feel like we were really in our wheelhouse. Like, it was a smaller party, but everything went off really well. Like, it was very well planned.
Like, we tried to do too much in the past?
Well, I
feel like the baseball field
or
whatever.
Like, the baseball... Yeah. I don't know. I don't really remember the baseball field being good or bad.
I thought it was
great.
But
last year was kind of a train wreck. But last year, if you think about it, was a beer festival with no volunteers.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. That sucks.
That sounds about right.
It sucked real bad.
No.
Yeah.
No, this year was great. The Peabody Brewery, I believe, is what the name was.
Mm-hmm.
They hit one out of the park. They were fantastic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Awesome. That's cool.
They handled everything. They poured all the beer. They provided all the beer and charged us a flat rate. We sold our merch. We had fun. We had an amazing band. It was awesome.
It was a good time.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I really wish I could have gone, man. That sucks. Stupid.
Next year's Minneapolis, so you get to redo everything at Northern Brewer again, right?
That was a great one. I remember that.
Minneapolis, yeah.
That was my first BNA party.
I also lost my voice.
Just now?
Over the week. From excessively drinking.
What was the best late night adventure? Were there any people there doing, for example, barley wine elevator verticals?
One at each floor?
Not that I'm aware of. I will say that the hotel we stayed at had a wonderful sky bar that was very liberal with the... amount of hard alcohol that they would give you in their mixed drinks. So we spent a lot of time there. As far as the beer went, I don't really think any of us got good and solid, you know,
good and
took
hammered.
One down for...
You said Push got pretty wrecked.
Yeah, gin and tonics.
Really? He's not drinking beer anymore. He's like I stopped drinking beer and I lost like 26 pounds. And you know Push, he's a super he's a short, skinny dude. Very
That's a
short,
lot of weight. To
super
lose 26
short,
pounds.
Almost midget height.
Not true.
I know.
Barely over doc.
Right, barely over doc, if at all.
Right. They're tight.
But I don't think he has 26 pounds to lose, man. But apparently
he did apparently, but he was drinking gin and tonic.
Wow.
Jamie, one of the other girls that works for the Brewing Network, was drinking Manhattans most of the time.
Nice. Respectable.
Classy. Yeah,
respectable.
That's a good drink.
I drank scotch.
That's a good drink also.
Straight scotch.
That's just kind of what happens, man. When you go to a beer conference, you get beered out very, very easily. So I think the key part of finding a hotel for NHC is that it has to have a well-stocked bar.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so it has to be open. It has to be a late-night bar.
Well, the roof bar closed at 12, but then there was a tavern in the lobby that closed at 1:30.
Nice.
So we just moved from one to the other. But we were allowed to order pizza in the downstairs bar, so that happened.
I wonder why so early. I thought on the West Coast, places stayed open until 4. Is that only New York or
It must
whatever?
Just be New York, because everything in Baltimore was closed down at 12. Or at 2, I'm sorry.
But you'd think at a hotel, the hotel bar would at least stay open, maybe not 24 hours. That's a little excessive. But it's not like you're driving anywhere. You're there. You're sleeping there.
Well, but
you're still
would they close their doors to the public?
Laws.
I don't know.
I don't think they want to encourage
the liquor laws, yeah.
that
yeah.
much drinking because you're going to go back to your room and puke all over the room right. that they have to clean up.
Yeah, the maids don't want
your,
that.
They get your that's credit card for incidentals, so they're covered.
No, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, they want you to do that.
Yeah,
maybe.
They do.
They'll overcharge you. $1,000 to clean up your vomit. Your vomptum.
So what about Brewers Night? Any good yeah. discoveries there? New breweries we need to know about?
Any clear beer?
There was some clear beer. No, I'm trying to remember Pro Brewers Night. What did I have?
I think Pro Boobs Night is that
Pro Boobs Night.
Strip,
yeah.
strip
you know,
clubs.
I
gin and tonic.
I'm really actually not the best person to talk to about this because I didn't drink much beer while we were there. I just kind of wandered around and talked to people because I had tied one on at the roof bar.
So, do you remember sending me your selfie?
I sent you a selfie.
You sent me a selfie.
Oh, perfect.
I'm trying to bring it up.
When? From Pro Night?
I don't know. It looked like you were in a bar by yourself.
Could have happened. I don't know.
Yeah. So, I got one of those from Doc. But he did say he was at the rooftop bar, so it might have been right next to
Bebo.
He might
have actually been by himself. I met him there a couple times. He was already there.
So I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but I'm just going to anyway. So when Bev and I were trying to fly out and I had my giant anxiety attack and didn't go and abandoned Beverly, I gave her half my Xanax. And give her half a Zanny.
Oh. It was great.
And she was like, this is the most amazing. Like, the turbulence was happening, and I just didn't care. And I'm like, that's exactly what it is. But for some reason,
I just kept playing cards on my phone, and it was fine.
So you know what? Ben's like...
When turbulence happens, you don't have to care anyway, because there's nothing you can do about
it. Yeah, I know. I know.
No, I understand that there's nothing I can do about it, but it doesn't mean I'm not scared.
The thing about anxiety is it's irrational.
Oh, I wasn't speaking specifically to that. I was just saying turbulence in general. Yeah. There's nothing you can do sitting in 18B about the turbulence that's happening.
Exactly. See, I think that if I grip my seat handles as hard as I can,
you might mellow it out.
My power alone is keeping that plane aloft. Physics be damned, lift be damned, it's me.
No,
I am keeping that plane
aloft. I'm only flying with Ted Raimi from now on.
You and your white knuckles.
I also think that if I'm like nodding off, if I jerk awake and grab whoever's next to me, stranger or friend, it's also going to help. They really appreciate that.
I used to have a lot more trouble with flying, but now I've gotten used to it.
Yeah.
And now I got to the point where like I feel really bad for people who do not fly often. You can tell they're like really freaked out by the turbulence.
Ugh.
Because and I used to be that way, and now I hear people like literally like gasp and stuff. I'm like, I've been there. It's terrible. It's terrible. Like there's nothing you can do. But I fly all the time for work, so it's just you got to deal with it.
Sucks.
It does.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But I just got used to it.
So I mailed Bev a shirt, really just to hide his Xanax in for her flight back.
He sure did.
So I'm texting you and I go, did you get my package? And I thought that was really clever. And she said, no, what name did you send it under? Then she replied.
Well, it could have been my maiden name. It could have been my real name.
So this is the text in sequential order or whatever. No, what name did you send it under? She drunk. You wrote.
Oh, that was her, not you.
You wrote she drunk, and then this is the photo that I got of Beverly taking a selfie in an empty hotel bar.
Wow, there's no one behind her in a bar.
Okay, that was from.
There's no one behind that chick.
Okay,
there's a TV on and no one there.
She was drunk. Everybody was sitting. We were sitting at a table, and it was very late, and everybody was around me.
Yeah,
like we were sitting around the table. I wasn't alone in a bar.
Looks real deep,
right?
It was 1:30. We were the only ones there.
So whoever took the picture said she drunk.
She drunk.
No, that was a selfie.
It was a selfie.
It was a selfie.
Yeah.
Okay. That was after the awards banquet where I was celebrating our not win.
You know, I just have to interject. You said you sent Xanax in a T-shirt. You don't have to like hide legal drugs. It's not an. It's a controlled substance.
It could have just been in an envelope.
Look, I just in case.
I was wondering
because they were non-prescription.
Like,
she didn't. I have a prescription. She doesn't. I thought that was illegal.
Is your name stamped on the pill? How would they know that it's not hers?
Well, it has my address. I don't know, man. Look, this is what I did. By the way, I want my shirt back.
I was like, why'd you send this? Keep it? Is it a churro shirt?
It's a churro shirt.
If you wore the shirt, maybe it would help calm you down on the flight back.
Because it smelled like it was used. I hadn't washed it. I took it off and put it in the envelope.
Oh, so it had. Yeah. It smelled like JP. That was
it.
Nice.
Smelled like fear. So it's going to be fine. Yeah,
lots of sweat.
Right.
Okay. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for the recap.
Yeah, no.
I appreciate it. I wish Tasty was here to kind
wasn't,
of.
I mean, I don't have a lot to say about the beer. I will say this.
The bars sound nice
at least as far as Pro Night, because I truly don't remember. But as far as club night went, I had some beer from, I don't remember the name of the club, but I do know that it's the same club that Dr. Lambic from the Sour Beer Blog is a part of. That was some of the best beer I had the whole night.
Wow. Well, if your name was Dr. Lambic, should be pretty good.
I don't think he's a real doctor.
Or that's not his name.
On Dr. Humphrey.
Oh, no, that's definitely not his name either. But
it's Mr. Lambic, but, you know, he likes to joke.
It was very nice to meet him, and he's making some great beer.
Okay. Well, that's good.
And so is this club.
Well, it sounds like a good time.
Beverly. It was fun. I had a great time.
Thank you. So for BNA 11, we had done... So Justin and I were supposed to do a show for you people. And obviously that didn't happen because I wasn't there. So, but I had done a Find the Fake. And so I want to play it now.
Oh.
But I'm Sons of Alchemy. That was what? The name of the club.
Okay.
Sorry.
Great.
Oh.
I'm going to play it now, but probably not Callers because Callers makes it really... confusing, and we don't have any prizes anyway.
You have to push buttons.
Who cares? So here's the deal, Ted.
Okay,
it's a totally unique game that I created. Totally made it up myself. I've written four news stories.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them are real,
mm-hmm.
and one is fake. And you have to find the fake one.
You're an innovator.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Would you like to play with us?
Sure, I'd
Great.
Love to play.
All right. So they're beer related. Brian, you too. You've never played this game before.
I have not.
All right. Let's just start from the top. So, again, there are four stories in total. Three are actually true. One is not.
Some would call it the fake.
Some would call it the fake, but who knows? Okay. This first one is called, "You Can Take Those Hops and Shove Them Up Your Ass." As science continues the hunt for a miracle plant to fight disease, more and more focus is paid to the most respected, and some would say way, way overused, friend of beer drinkers everywhere, the hop. It's known that certain compounds in hops aid in reducing cholesterol, blood sugar, and even help with weight loss. Now, research at Oregon State University is showing that a natural flavonoid compound in hops can be beneficial to the male prostate gland. Testing has shown to significantly improve some of the underlying markers of prostate complications in laboratory animals so far, but there's a catch. The treatments are most effective when applied directly to the prostate. So researchers from the OSU College of Pharmacy have partnered with ProzCure, the makers of the number one prostate suppository on the market, to craft a medication comprised of essential oils from hops.
So all that butt chugging I did in college is healthy.
It's paying off so far.
Right.
Yeah.
My prostate's thanking me.
That does sound like something that JP would make up, but it's too well written.
Great. The second one is called Craft Beer. So hot right now. A Pizza Hut in London will soon be rolling out a new ingredient in specially selected offerings. Beer. While the beer goes unnamed, Kath Austin, director of HR and marketing at Pizza Hut Restaurants, said, quote, "We know that craft beers are really popular right now, and we're celebrating this," end quote. I like that quote. I think it's great. They've designed two special edition flavors that will be trialed this week and rolled out nationwide if they prove to be a hit. One is called the Steak Feast, and the other is called the American Hot. So how do you get such an amazing, flavorful, and delicious thing like something called the American Hot, made with quote-unquote craft beer? Simply whisper, "I like it, hop," when placing your order. Because everybody loves a cheesy beer pun. I like it, hop. You're supposed to whisper, "I like it, hop."
But the beer's American Hot, or hop.
The beer is just beer. They haven't, this craft beer. They're not saying what beer. The pizza is called the American Hot.
Oh,
so it has,
okay.
like, pepperonis and bullshit
right. and
on
you
it.
You say, if I like it, hop.
Hop.
It, yeah, if I like it, hop. Then
yes.
you get a beer with the pizza.
Are you? No.
No?
No. The, no. The, those two pizzas have, craft beer in the dough.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I may not have, written it very well, but.
This is the fake.
No, I rewrite them all. I rewrite them all. This next one is called, "If You Can't Beat 'Em, Eat 'Em." Oprah Winfrey, queen of the yo-yo diet, has had her fair share of food-related struggles. Very public food-related struggles. Now, rumors are swirling that Oprah will be launching her own line of food products, aptly called Oprah's Kitchen. Included in the paperwork was a list of items that spanned the four food groups and then some. Bacon, caviar, processed and preserved foods, and beer. No details are available beyond the trademark filing, but it's safe to assume that these foods will coincide with her recent investment of Weight Watchers, potentially applying a point value to her craft beer line. Now maybe we can move beyond those beer rating sites and talk about point values that really matter. And last but not least, this one's called I'm Too Dumb to Pour. Pouring a beer is really hard, right? I mean, you have to get the tilt just right, and then there's the foam. It's all simply too much. Don't worry, Brian. There's a solution. Something called the Beer Hour Stadium Foamy Head Dispenser. Manufactured by the Takaranomi Company out of Beer Happy Japan, this product with the amazing name acts like a beer-powered squirt gun, using your favorite can of beer as the tank. Sorry, bottle drinkers. Using the Beer Hour Stadium Foamy Head Dispenser guarantees you will finally achieve the proper beer-to-foam ratio. Lucky you. And those are your stories.
So is Beer Happy Japan a place?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're nuts about beer over there, those kids.
There's a town called Beer Happy.
Beer Happy Japan. It's a Japanese company.
Oh.
You okay. Hear as well as you read.
Well, no. You said in Beer Happy Japan. Right?
Out of Beer Happy Out. Japan.
Okay, so that I thought that meant Beer Happy, comma Japan, like
I can't
conquered California.
No,
okay.
Beer had the.
I'm trying to find the fake here. So if you're going to tell me that some place is called Beer Happy Japan,
that's going to be it,
right?
Okay, but no, Beer Happy Japan. Okay. Beer Happy was the descriptor, adjective, okay. Adjective.
Sure.
Adjective. Pronoun.
Yeah.
Right.
Adjective.
Sentence fragment.
Thank you very much.
Nice descriptive language there.
Thank you. Okay, so let's go around the room real fast. Ted, which one do you think is fake?
Can I explain why I think it's fake?
Totally.
Even though I believe that people will believe the prostate one.
Yes.
The prostate is not in the rectum. And I don't know about the transdermal absorption things that would be going on for some sort of an enema to have an effect on the prostate. Like, let's just...
Okay.
I understand the simple biology of location, but it's not actually in the rectum, so I don't understand how you're going to... There needs to be a compound that they prove that it, like, absorbs through whatever is separating... Again, I understand they're nearby. But again, the prostate is not in that area.
Trust me, I know they're right. Yeah.
That's
all
why
close.
It immediately made alarm bells go up. I was like, "Well, it's not in there."
Yeah.
I understand how suppositories work. For, yeah. Like when you're nauseous, and I remember like as a young kid, like when I was like puking my guts out, they had to give my mom to have me take like a suppository.
This goes right into your bloodstream there. Right?
Really for right. Sickness? Yeah. I never even knew that.
Oh yeah, no, that's a thing. That's an anti-nausea thing. Because like the next step after that is if that doesn't shut you down, they got to take you and put you on IVs because you'll get dehydrated if you're a little kid and stuff.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
That was just that set off my alarm bells because knowing human physiology and such that. Made me a little bit dubious.
Okay.
I mean, there's other ones I could pick, but that was just the first one. I got to go science first.
Okay. All right. Brian.
Hi.
Hi, buddy. What do you think?
I think that all the stories are true because I'm just kind of gullible that way.
Because JP read them to you?
No, right. But if I had to pick one that was real for sure,
which you do,
have to be Pizza Hut. Because
that's real
for
sure.
Why else would you talk about Pizza Hut?
Yeah.
And it sounds like something dumb that they would do.
Okay.
Oprah, you know, she talks about liking bread. She talks about, you know, and the Weight Watchers thing. You're right. That's got to be, there's a filing. Who knows if it'll turn into something, but that sounds true.
Okay.
And then, you've got Japan, which of course they're beer crazy like us. And of course they're going to have a crazy invention that squirts the head of beer foam out of a can. Sorry. You know, yeah. I mean, I have to admit, the first one was very well written, but I do agree with Ted.
Okay. So you're saying the first one also?
I'm saying the first one also.
Warren?
Well, I'm going to make it unanimous.
You would, too.
But my reasoning was because not that I know everything that's in hops, but I know hops have a lot of estrogen in them.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, when you're talking about how all these things help the male anatomy and everything, I was like, hops seem like a more feminine biased plant in terms of the hormones and stuff that are going on inside there, the chemistry.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, and I don't know where my rectum is, so Ted was definitely helpful with that lesson.
Rectum? I don't even know.
Right, yeah. What is your rectum?
I know where my butthole is, though.
I heard that Pizza Hut was kind of getting into the alcohol business, and of course Oprah thinks that her listeners are interested in caviar and beer, because that's her key demographic.
For sure. Caviar and beer, baby.
And why not have a beer squirt gun? So... Yeah.
Okay.
Hops aren't healthy.
Basically, as soon as he said the word butt, we all knew that was one he made up.
Here's my deal, though. There's people all over the Bay Area. If you told them this, they would jump right on. They'd be like, oh, of course.
That's true.
Hop oil is good for my prostate.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be? Right.
But you're rattling on all these other things. It's like, well, it's good for your cholesterol. Oh, shit, my cholesterol is kind of high. And I drink a shit ton of hoppy beers.
Yeah.
My doctor's not telling me to drink more, and there must be something wrong here.
Right.
That's
hops
the problem.
Are good for sleeping. You fill a pillow with hops, and apparently you'll go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Or lavender.
Does lavender do it too?
Well, I guess. Oh. Yeah, and it doesn't turn cheesy.
Oh, like hops can.
Anyway, this is the first time that the studio was unanimous against me. You guys all picked the fake story.
Oh,
congratulations.
Wow. It was unanimous, and we got it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah. Yes, that was a fake one. So, but see, here's the thing. And so I thought about it the other day, and I was like reading some shit about hops, and they were talking about, it's good with weight loss and reducing your blood sugar. And I'm like, what about prostate or something? Like, what's the next level for men's health? And then I was like, oh, like a suppository. Does that even exist? Apparently there are essentially like prostate vitamins that you shove up your ass.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like a thing. So ProzCure is the makers of the number one prostate suppository.
How does
in the
that
market.
Work though? But that's not what prostate is.
Well, and so
it's skipping your mouth and stomach and
it's
just
skipping
shoving
your mouth
it right
and
into your
and so
intestines.
I think the problem is, I put that you have to apply it directly to the gland,
which again, like, it was my point. I was like, that's impossible.
How do you get in?
Right,
so you can't rip through a bunch of scanners.
Maybe that was it. So if I would explain that a little bit more, maybe I would have fooled you guys.
The suppository acts most quickly because it's very in close proximity.
I think I just wanted to write the headline.
I swear that I've read things about like the hops with the cholesterol and those health
benefits.
Yeah,
all true.
Yeah,
for sure. That's all true. That shit's all true, dude.
Eloquently put.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
That was well written, I have to say. I almost didn't think it was yours. No, I was waiting for the stinker to come along.
Right. Let's see. I think we're going to take a break real fast, and then we're going to come back. We're going to do the Twitter game, and then we're going to chat about Lee real fast. I'd like to do a quick toast to Lee and kind of, get sad real fast. And then we're going to go home. We're going to eat some tacos and get out of here. But before I do that, I do want to tell you guys about Beersmith. If you are still doing brewing calculations by hand or have some other funky-ass program to save all your recipes and to do all your calculations, throw all that shit away and get Beersmith. Go to beersmith.com, get your 21-day free trial. You can actually import all that crap. You have to sit there and type it because, you're still stuck in, the early 2000s. Who the fuck are you? Go to beersmith.com, 21-day free trial. It's seriously the best software on the market right now. Pro brewers use it. Home brewers use it. Everybody uses it. It's totally, totally easy, and it's free for 21 days. So if you don't like it, you're out nothing. Literally, you're out nothing. So check it out.
They'll email you back.
And they'll email you back, apparently, in under 7 minutes. So actually, you should do that. Download it and start testing Brad's reply time.
Right. And everyone just email Brad right now.
And report back to us.
Yeah, let us know how quick he gets
because
back.
Because if he doesn't, if it's over the 7 minutes, I'll call Brad personally for you.
Yeah. We'll see how quick he returns the call.
I won't actually do that. Let me do my thing.
Press those buttons.
Pressing buttons, baby. All right, it's a session. Everybody, hang on real tight. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the
Brewing Network.
If you haven't heard, there's a completely new brand of brewing equipment. Kettles, burners, and accessories. Trustworthy everyday gear that helps you forge and shape outstanding beer the way you want. It's called Anvil Brewing Equipment.
Hi, I'm John Palmer. You may remember me from such self-help books as How to Brew, Brewing Classic Styles, Water, and the Brew Strong Podcast. I am very pleased to announce the debut of Anvil Brewing Equipment from Blickman Engineering. I have been working closely with them these past few years to develop products that combine the best of materials, features, and price point. Each of these products has been developed, tested, and reviewed to meet these ideals and bears the Palmer Brewing Solutions stamp of approval on the packaging. Anvil Brewing Equipment, inspired by Palmer, built by Blickman, and made for you.
Check out anvilbrewing.com. Anvil. Durable. Reliable. Dependable.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a Certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerone are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and the freshest ingredients, backed by the best customer service in the business. Do you like to mash using efficient fly sparging, but would like an easy way to heat your strike and sparge water? Enter the new Brewer's Edge electric mash water heater, a plug-in, anywhere, precisely controlled heater for strike and sparge water. Ditch the fumes and second burner and make mashing easy. Go to williamsbrewing.com today and browse their vast selection. That's williamsbrewing.com. Orders placed by 4 p.m. Pacific time weekdays ship the same day. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters, this is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
Find Heretic Beers near you. Click on Find Some at HereticBrewing.com.
Segmented, demented, fermented, fermented.
It's the session.
Yeah! Come on out! All right. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. The light at the end of the tunnel, I promise you.
You remember last year we talked to you guys about the California Craft Beer Summit. Well, guess what? That is back. Join them for 3 days of beer tasting and education, followed by the largest craft beer festival in the state, featuring over 160 craft breweries pouring over 450 beers, all based right here in California, which I think is pretty cool. Number one, that's a fuck ton of beer. But number two, all are in California.
Right. And for its first year, they did a great job putting that festival
together. That's right,
together. You went. Yeah, I was there, and that was a really good festival for being its first year. There wasn't anything that I would change. It was really cool being on. They blocked the whole Capitol Street, whatever the street is that goes down away from the Capitol. So you got a nice building to look at.
I think that's Broken Promises Way. Is what the Capitol
Shattered
is
Dreams Drive.
Right. It's at the corner. The 3-day event features opportunities to taste, judge, pair, and experience craft beer at the Sacramento Convention Center, September 8th through the 10th. Educational tracks include the history of beer, food and beer pairings, sip and judge lessons with Cicerone so you can learn about what you're tasting, and the history of California's favorite styles. An entire educational track dedicated to the art of homebrewing has been added to this year's summit, including how to go off recipe, how to start homebrewing, and how to taste different beer styles. Plus, on the Expo Hall Floor, homebrew clubs will be demonstrating live. Leaders in the brewing industry will be telling stories about their days as, quote, garage brewers. And career advisors will be teaching classes on how and when it's time to start a brewery. Purchase festival tickets today. Take advantage of their 25% off early bird ticket prices. Offer ends June 30th. Also, the folks at the CAA Craft Beer Summit are giving away a pair of festival tickets right here on the session. If you want your chance to win, tune in to the June 27th show. And by then, I'm sure we'll think of some way to give them away. You can check out the full schedule of speakers, educational seminars, ticket options, and list of California breweries pouring at cacraftbeersummit.com.
Nice. If everyone's busy, then I'll just take the tickets. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, that's really nice of you.
I'd make your job easier, and I'll just take them.
I won't. I appreciate that. Yeah. I actually won't be here that show. That'll be a rare Justin show.
What?
I'll be in heading down to... Where the fuck am I going?
Disneyland?
Palmdale. No.
Lancaster?
No, keep going. Starts with a P.
San Diego.
Rose Bowl. Pasadena. Thank you very much. I'm going to Pasadena to watch a Liverpool take on Chelsea, baby.
Mm.
Excited. Yes.
Mm. Who's Chelsea?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
That's part of the International Champions Cup?
Yes. Okay. I think so.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. I just know that Liverpool are playing, and I'm like, I'll pretend to be your job, and I'll do play-by-play.
They haven't got a chance.
How do you do play-by-play? That, to me, play-by-play is like the hardest thing in sports.
You said it, not me. I don't know. I just describe what's happening on the pitch.
He kicked it, and then that guy kicked it.
But like to get everyone's names like real fast and kind of like I was listening to Doc, not our Doc. Doc's here.
Doc Emmer. I love Doc.
He's okay. I guess that his team sucks, but he's great.
He's incredible.
And just the back and forth, he's naming every player, and it's like that is too fast. And maybe soccer's a bit slower, but to me that blows my mind.
Even still, but I mean the prep for any broadcast like that, like I literally studied these guys' names like it's the table of elements. Like literally, I have flashcards.
Oh really?
And I look at it, and it'll be on the one side. It'll be like number two, and then it'll be the Portland Timbers, and on the other side is Elvis Powell, and it'll tell me all of his information, and I'll remember that going through. I mean, it's really tedious, and it's funny because I hated studying in high school, but like now it's the one aspect of the job that I come to love because I'm like, wow, like now that I have, you know, all this time to fill, I can learn about these guys and actually use it as opposed to most of what I studied in school, which was not usable in the slightest.
Right.
Where, you know, it's like for broadcast, it's like, yeah, okay, I can use this. And I know that, like, these numbers, so, like, as immediately if it goes to da 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 da, oh no, number two passes to number six. That's Powell to Nagbe. And they're going to toss it back to number seven. That's Nat Borchers. And then they toss it over to number four. That's Liam Ridgewell. And, like, you start.
You'll do fake plays in your head, essentially.
Yeah, but I mean, these are since the last broadcast we did before the break for Copa was the Quakes and Timbers. All the Timbers numbers are still fresh in my head.
Yeah.
So like that's just like it's like you don't like, you memorize the numbers, but they cease to become numbers. They become just boom. It's like you see that number and then you immediately know the name.
It's kind of like the BJCP styles. I mean, when I was used to the 2008 guys, I'm like, it's a 5-8, it's a Maybach. And all the stats. You know, that's all that being a beer judge is about.
Oh, no, that's exactly what it is because I do the boutique amplifier world and all of the, you know, the very quick initials that you guys would use. Somebody look at it and be like, I don't know what that means. It's the same thing with amplifiers. Like you look at it and you automatically know when somebody's talking about a FBF
65, you know, whatever, you're like, oh, they're talking about 1965 Fender Twin Reverb Blackface. Like, you just know exactly what it is. Of course.
Yeah, of course, right.
Of course, and in that case, the term blackface is not offensive. They're actually talking about the literal blackface of the amplifier.
Right.
It's the one time in the world where that actually, you're allowed to use that term, or you're not talking about somebody ruining their career.
Right.
But it's just, yeah, it's that immediately. You guys know exactly if something's being referenced that's specific to your world. I'm sure it took you a learning style at first, but now you don't even... You don't even think about it.
Well, beer is really easy, and so you know you don't have to be a genius to do it.
But here's, you actually do have to be pretty smart, because I actually there are other people who be like, oh, you like them beers with the letters on the front. And I'm like, yes.
I only drink beers with America on the label.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
It's just, but you still hear stuff like that where people who want to be like indignant about the fact that people are drinking anything but like a classic American lager.
Yeah, like
I like those. I like a banquet beer, but I also like an IPA.
Sure, like it's some sort of insult to want to drink something that has different flavor.
God forbid.
Not better.
Yeah.
Maybe not more. I don't know, but just different.
Well, and it's worked its way into their ad campaigns too. With the you know, you can have your peach cobbler beer.
Yeah. And peach cobbler beer. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Doc's joining us.
Hi, Doc. I am.
You're just getting back from NHC.
Yeah.
How was that experience for you? Traveling back. You should have been, were you supposed to be back yesterday?
Yeah, and my friend from D.C. came up, and so I decided to extend it another day.
Yeah.
And then I had to take a different flight and got stuck in Dallas. It was pouring rain.
Oh, I got stuck in Dallas yesterday, too.
Dallas is the worst.
Well, then I got my bag at Oakland. And it was all wet, whole bag.
Really?
Uh-oh, did a beer explode?
No, it was outside in the rain.
Oh.
You know, it sit on this cart, and it was just, I've never seen it rain that hard anywhere. Thunder and lightning, it's just, and the whole place is starting to get packed, because plane flights are delayed. And
I would have freaked, I would have panicked.
That's why this bag was wet when I was opening it earlier.
Yeah.
Because I also got stuck in Denver.
Okay.
No, Dallas.
Dallas.
Sure.
Yeah, one of those two.
But you got stuck in Denver.
No, I got stuck in Denver.
I got stuck in Dallas.
Oh, it was pouring rain in Denver.
Like Dallas in history.
You couldn't even see out the windows because it was coming down so hard.
No, I would have panicked. There's no way. There's no way. I'd be like lost in translation. Or what was that movie with fucking Tom Hanks? And he was like lived in an airport for 11 years or whatever. Not Lost in Translation. What is it?
What, up in the air?
He was like a Russian.
I know what you're talking about.
He lived in the airport?
Yeah, he lived in
the airport because he had problems with his visa.
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Right.
I never saw it either.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
From
Castaway.
I thought you were talking about Castaway.
I like Castaway.
Castaway's good.
Yeah. So also, when I got to Oakland, they announced that they just had 60 planes just come in. So
all from Dallas,
Everywhere. But it's, you can imagine trying to get your bag.
No,
I mean there's not even standing room anywhere in the baggage claim area, and it was just insane.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and then I'd go to get the off shuttle bus. The shuttle to get to where my car is.
Yeah.
And I missed the first one. And the second one comes, and about 50 people try to get on it. Fuck. And then another one comes right behind it. Yeah. And then another 25 people just rush in. I barely got on that one. I had to knock down an old lady.
You didn't have to, but you did.
Right.
Yeah.
You get the opportunity, man. You take it.
Well, God bless you. Thanks for coming in.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Warren, let's do the Twitter game.
Oh.
The Twitter game, which was brought to you by HopTech.
Oh.
Jaden Roberto from HopTech.com.
Catch me if you can.
No.
No, that's Leonardo DiCaprio being a con artist.
Oh, wow.
It's called The Terminal.
The Terminal.
That's it.
Okay. I'm not up on these movie things.
You're new to these movies?
Oh, Tom Hanks is in this movie. And it looks like it involves someone with a pilot hat on.
I think it was Big.
I think it was Big.
Big.
All right, Warren, what was the Twitter game, please?
All right, the Twitter game was, since Quaff won this year, or won Club of the Year this year, what are the naysayers going to boo next year at NHC?
Doc's shoes.
He's got to get new shoes. That's the second year in a row.
I know. Okay.
The BJCP.
He didn't have a lot of time to prepare.
That's all right. Let's see.
He had a year.
Oh, no. So these first three, apparently I didn't copy the Twitterer. I just copied the thing. Shit. Well,
Warren!
If they win, then I'll look it up. Otherwise,
okay.
they'll just be anonymous.
Okay.
Okay, so somebody said the audience starts booing themselves for booing. A vicious cycle ensues, and everyone dies.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah. The next anonymous person says, the banquet food. Too soon?
Food.
Oh.
I heard the food was terrible.
I heard nothing but complaints.
It was horrible.
There's no theme to it. It was just food, and it was bad.
Better food.
Yeah,
no, they tried to theme it.
They did?
We had, like, crab paella, which was edible.
Okay.
What did they pair that with?
One of my first qualities of food that I need to find desirable is the edibility factor. Needs to be at least five.
Like, yeah. You want to be able to chew it?
Yeah.
Couldn't chew the pork.
No, we got a plate of a bunch of pork, and you're supposed to, like...
They served it family style. They did not bring out
family
plates.
Style. Oh. And then you get it in a semi-cold and dry as hell.
I had roasted potatoes for dinner because that was... edible.
I had beer.
Yeah, he
beer
did.
Is a food.
Then you ordered pizza at the lobby bar at midnight, right?
Oh yeah, we heard.
Oh, I had pizza at 3:30 in the morning.
Oh yeah.
I got back to the room and I came to, and me and Push were in there, and he goes, "I'm hungry." Like, I'm hungry too. So I called down the front desk and, "How can I get pizza?" And they said, "You got to come down here and call." So I go down there barefoot. I think I was just wearing shorts.
You were in your underwear.
Yeah.
yeah, shorts.
And a 4-star hotel.
I can picture this.
And so,
and I'm sure it's not the first or last time it's happened.
It's literally 3:30.
Yeah.
And I called the first place, couldn't get through, called the second place, ordered pizza. Went upstairs, promptly forgot that I ordered pizza. And I couldn't wake Push up. Okay, first the security knocks on the door, and because they brought up the pizza guy.
Okay. All right.
And so got that, and I couldn't wake Push up. He was just like, he just went comatose instantly. And so I'm sitting there at about 3:30, 3:45, munching on pizza, happy as a clam, because my memory is back by then.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I remember ordering this pizza.
I remember ordering the pizza. I remember being back in the room, but there's a good hour and a half in between that.
No.
Nothing.
Maybe you tired Push out.
Yeah, well, of course.
All right, Warren, go ahead, please.
All right, so... in that amount of time, I was able to look up who tweeted all these things. Okay. So that was effing beer, TM.
Which one?
The food.
Okay.
Too soon.
Okay.
The first one was Rich S. about the audience. And the next one from The One is his name, I guess.
Okay.
Tasty finally defying the odds of the death pool. Hashtag RIP Tasty.
Okay.
So they're booing the fact that Tasty's not there, I guess.
Or the fact that he died. Oh, yeah, I get it. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's all right.
Okay. Tony D says, everything? Nothing? Who the F knows? Or cares? Sorry. Alex B says, all the damn nice Minnesotans, they're too damn polite. Because Minnesota nice is a thing.
Yeah.
And no one likes it.
I know about Minnesota nice.
I'm married to it. It's awful.
Why isn't that a strip club name?
Minnesota nice.
Minnesota nice. Huh?
Oh. Sounds like you need a business to open.
Shit, good. Another failure.
You got something to look forward to next time. Next time NHC rolls around, huh?
Great.
Maybe it'll get you there.
Joe says, Beardy's beard, it's too long and full of yeast. So I would get booed.
Okay. Man, after the first two, these are all kind of stinkers.
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on?
They peaked early.
Yeah, they did.
Timothy says, not having an e-club to join and make better beer than the brick-and-mortar clubs.
Okay.
And then Marcus says, if Quaff wins again, they'll boo because it's an old-school club that refused to keep up with the modern times. Kind of ironic about how we're an e-club.
Or yeah.
Let's see. I like this one. Pete the Dink says, boo the BN Club for not sharing enough information, regardless of what happens.
Okay, that's all right. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Blobbergop closes it out with us. We regain our title, and JP is forced to give a speech because Jay is absent, and JP rants for 24 minutes about cloudy IPA.
of all of the things that possibly could happen in any sort of form of reality.
That is the most real.
That would be the most realistic.
Yeah.
Well, the two on my list were they would end up booing themselves or end up booing the food. Does anybody want to add any more to the list before we vote?
If they were going to boo the food, they would have booed it this year.
Yeah. They booed it just silently, man. It was like, I just heard it from everybody.
I like Blobbers about booing you for having to give the speech and ranting.
Why are people literally booing? That's such an extreme take.
Oh yeah. The last couple of years when the Brewing Network won Club of the Year, half the room of like 1,500 people.
Yeah.
Well, we're not a real club.
And they're not even a real club, but still, it's still bad.
I'm joking. We're totally real.
No, I get it. We talked about the literal, like, what we're sitting in right now, the brick and mortar. It just seems so extreme.
Yeah. It is extreme.
It's a hobby.
Booing anything but a sports team. Yeah. Maybe a politician.
It's just hateful.
But you guys are. There's nothing about you guys that's remotely political, and that's a compliment.
Right.
And it's kind of like this is all
beer has its own politics, and for sure.
Even a sports team. Yeah. How would you like tens of thousands of people booing you for having a bad day at the office?
Oh, have you been to a Sharks game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm saying, how would you feel?
Let's get Patrick Marleau on the phone.
Yes.
For a bad day at the office.
Right.
It's still shitty even for a sports team to have that happen.
That's true.
But they're getting compensated like millions of dollars. No offense to anybody. No one in this room, I imagine, is getting compensated millions of dollars. If so, you needed to tell me a long time ago, Jason.
You're probably safe with that assumption.
I'll give you two of my Teslas.
Just two?
Yeah, just two. Well, I need five, so.
You pick your own colors.
Which one?
You pick your colors.
Wednesday and Friday?
Get a free wrap.
You don't like
on
those
it
ones?
Yeah, but...
Okay, let's vote on this fucking game, huh? I'm getting tired.
You look tired.
Thank you very much.
It looks good on you.
So I have three. They didn't boon themselves. They didn't boon the food or whatever Blobber said about me. Anything else? No?
Those were the highlights, I think.
All right, who says we would end up booing? They would end up booing themselves. I like that one.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
Well, that's it.
That's vicious unanimous. All right, Rich S., you're the winner, bro.
Rich S.
Yay. Rich S., I'm an imagination.
You did great, buddy.
Yeah, you went from anonymous to winner.
Yeah.
Real fast.
Yeah, unlike in hockey, if you're second place, you suck.
And you deserve to get booed.
Yeah.
Were the Sharks fans booing? I heard.
Well, last night?
Yes.
No, they were cheering.
Were they?
Oh, yeah.
Because
did they know who won?
It seemed like. Like when Crosby was getting the Conn Smythe or whatever, and when he went out, maybe they were just booing him. But for the first couple of rounds when they were throwing the cup out, sounded a lot like booing.
No, there was a little bit of booing in that regard. Yeah. I thought you meant were they booing the Sharks. Because
No.
Because I was ringside for Game 7 when they lost to the Kings 2 years ago. And being ice level when those boos started raining down in the final minute, it was intimidating. I was like, oh, dear God, this is terrible. Like, it was one of the most revealing experiences of my life to be there, like, literally ringside and hearing those boos come down. I was thinking, this is not okay. But last night, it sounded like when they were doing the Conn Smythe, I think there was a little bit for Crosby. But once they started the presentation, I think Sharks fans realized, like, hey, you know what? This is more than a rivalry. This is the history of hockey. You gotta cheer because of what it represents.
Yeah.
And same thing when they were, when they first presented the Stanley Cup. When they said your champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think there was booze. But then when the cup came out, I think they then cheered again. Because Sharks fans are pretty, even though, the Bay Area is not exactly Hockey Town USA, the fans here are smart enough and they realize quickly enough, like, you know what, you got to show your respect where you need to show your respect.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time they've gotten this far.
Yeah.
This is a big, big thing. I know a lot of Sharks fans who've been pissed off for years and hate life, and you don't even want to look at their Facebook page on a Sharks game day because you just know it's going to be something horrible.
That's me.
Is that the smoked porter again? What do you?
No, this is the espresso. It's the Imperial espresso stout. No, we haven't tried this one yet. So it's 9.5, which is great. Anyway, that
I need all of that.
That wraps up the show. But here, would you mind just
I got to give a great shout out to my handlers this year.
Okay, who were they?
They did a bang up job.
Yeah, just
the whole team.
The whole team. How many did you have?
Three to four.
Doc needs handlers. Doc gets not out of control, but he cuts loose.
I can wander off.
Yeah.
Right.
That's for everybody, Doc, so be careful how much you pour. Okay.
Too bad.
Doc cuts loose.
Somebody needed to have handled that poor man.
Probably.
I like Doc.
Yeah.
I've known him for 18 minutes. I like that. Anybody that does the name, how did you come about the doc?
Justin.
He's a doctor.
And I'm a doctor.
There's that.
A literal doctor?
He earned it.
Good. Oh, he's a dentist.
That's a doctorate.
Yeah. Hey,
DDS.
Yeah.
Doctor of dental surgery.
There it is.
How many years of school?
It's only 10 years of school. Yeah.
Yeah. How many do you remember?
The 80s were kind of medicated. pretty much most of them.
Oh. Yeah.
Hey.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So it's, but in general, that whole decade was a little blurry.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I feel like if you were alive in the 80s and it wasn't blurry, you didn't do it right.
Exactly.
No. Anyway, so to wrap up the show, I do want to talk about the passing of our friend Lee, co-host of Dr. Homebrew and master BJCP extraordinaire. For those of you who are listeners to Dr. Homebrew, you'll remember about 6 months ago or so, he left the show. And it was, we had said, oh, there's like an allergy thing, which is honestly what we thought it was. Right, Brian?
He did get like every
winter he had this cough.
Yeah, it would kick in and we'd be like struggling through shows and it seemed like the run-of-the-mill thing.
You can go back and listen to it. It's like he got phlegmy and he just was terrible. And so he approached me in like December and he's like, look, I'm not going to be able to do the show. I think it's going to be terrible radio because I'm coughing every 5 minutes. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I understand. I appreciate it. Go get yourself checked out, but we'll see you next month. He's like, hopefully. And then, he wrote me back a couple weeks later and was like, hey, my doctor says I have lung cancer. And it's pretty aggressive, and I think it was stage 4 at the time or something. I forget.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, just keep it to yourself. Tell the Brewing Network people so they know that I'm not some fucking flake. But, and at this point, we've been doing shows for like 2 years.
Yeah, it'd been going on for, probably 2.5 years by then.
Yeah. And so I honored his request, of course. I'm not going to call anybody out, but he wanted to get a handle on what was going on. And, occasionally we get updates and they became less frequent as the months carried on, as the medication kind of took its toll. But he was always remaining very positive about it. And I would always tell him, like, look, when are you coming back? It was never really an option in my mind that he wasn't coming back. And I don't think, obviously, it was in his as well. I mean, he was very steeped in science. He was very much the guy who, didn't trust a faith or didn't trust something other than some, remedy of, like, getting wrapped in seaweed wraps or whatever to, like, cure it. He was like, this is a cancer, and I'm going to fix it with drugs, with medication, and it's going to work.
Chemo and, yeah.
Right.
And, apparently it worked for a bit, and I think it kind of came back, and then it moved into his liver, and I think that's ultimately kind of what did him in, unfortunately. He just never could come back from that. I think the last email I got from him was May 4th, and he had taken a walk, and he was like, I'm feeling pretty good, and the drugs seem to be working, and at least not growing, and everything's cool, and then... I don't know, a few weeks after that, his brother posted on Facebook, and he was like, it's not going well.
Yeah, that was very similar to my last email from Lee, too. It was like he was kind of coasting along, and it seemed like things weren't getting worse, as things were kind of stabilizing, but he was in, he was fighting for his life, and you knew it, but you never want to assume that your friend and the mentor in many ways isn't going to come back, so it's rough, man.
Yeah, for sure. And I didn't know Lee very well. We didn't hang out or anything, but I'd known him in the beer industry and obviously doing the show. I mean, you hang out with a guy for 3 hours every month, you get to know him as much as you can. And he was a good dude. He was a sarcastic dude, very dry, funny, knew a shit ton about beer, man, and was just very inspiring in that way. Very inspiring in the beer industry, in the beer community. I know Peter Munoz, one of our friends here, friend of the show and a friend personally, learned a lot
And I think learned a lot from Lee. And I think Peter makes some great beer, and I think a lot of it has to do with Lee. And Peter has a great palate and a great sense for what he's tasting, and a lot of that he'll give props to Lee. And I think there are hundreds, I would bet hundreds of other people that can make that same claim.
Yeah. Hundreds is not stretching it at all.
Not at all.
I helped Lee with classes in Oakland, Berkeley, and classes in San Francisco. He helped out the San Francisco Homebrewers Guild with a batch of like some people who have become really good judges. And when I first got into beer judging, I met Lee in 2003 when I had first gotten into home brewing. I started brewing in like December of 2002, and I made some beers, and I entered in this competition I'd heard about called the World Cup. Yeah. And I believe at the time Lee was the president of the Barrier Mashers, and I brought my beer into this competition, and I won a second place ribbon with one of the first five beers I had brewed in like the American Amber Ale category, which was huge. And I was like stoked, and I'm at this competition. I'm like, I wanted to get more involved with the community, and I started talking to people, and they're like, talk to Lee, and like, how do you get involved here, and what's going on? And I was like one of these newbies that we hear sometimes is really enthusiastic about stuff and coming into it and wants to brew a lot and learn more. So I talked to Lee there for a couple of minutes and asked him about the club and what they do and what the dues are and all this stuff. And at the time it was living in Pleasanton or getting over to Oakland or Berkeley was kind of far for me. So I didn't join the club then. I just started my own club later. But he kind of just made it sound really easy. It was just like, we just have a club. Just pop in and, you can visit us and meet some of our members. And people are all about sharing knowledge. And that's one of the things he was always all about, was just sharing his knowledge. And when I started getting into judging, he helped us. He helped me learn a lot about Belgians because he's been over there many times and knows a lot of the styles that I had weaknesses in. I know German styles pretty well and American styles, but I was I had some gaps. So I'm like, what beer should I bring in for my beer judging class that I was starting? And he really filled me in with a lot of good knowledge. And again, he didn't give me shit for being ignorant, and he wanted to share it. He wanted to help people out, and that's what he was all about.
Yeah, I really appreciated his gift of being able to share his knowledge and give you honest feedback in a way that didn't make people defensive. And it was just, he was the right amount of encouraging and also just honest feedback that it was very disarming to people. And it's just awesome that he got the chance to be on the Brewing Network to spread that a lot farther than he could just from the local homebrew club.
Yeah, I think we're very lucky happened as well, for sure.
And better for all of us.
Yeah, you're right. His feedback was very, and I think that's the clinician in him. That's that very scientific. It's just, this is what it is. There's no judgment, but here is how you can fix it. Or this is, oftentimes, this is what I'm getting.
Right.
And if, and he would go to bat for what he believed he was tasting, but he would acquiesce, and that's what makes a good beer judge.
Yeah. And I think he just did a great job of making sure that you didn't feel that there wasn't any judgment like, oh, you're a shitty brewer.
Yeah. Like you should stop.
It's best if you just stop right
now. Yeah. Like let's just sell all your equipment. I'll take your bottles and shit, but everything else you can just throw away because you're rubbish. You're never going to be any good at this.
Yeah.
It was never that. It was very much always encouraging.
Yeah. Even if you're drinking a horrible beer. I mean, there's some beer judges that will say, you got it into the bottle. Here you go. But I mean, those are the beers that need the most feedback, and he would pick out specific defects and help you. He knew how to fix all of them. A lot of us, I need to study for many more years before I get anywhere near as knowledgeable as he was on a lot of those topics. And he was actually a lower ranked judge than me for a while, but when we started our judging group, I worked my way up pretty fast, and I never got a big head about it. But I just found, and he never made a big announcement. I just found out one day he was master level, and I was like, oh, cool. It was probably around the time we were starting the idea of the show, and I knew he was like a great person to talk about beer with. It's like, well, let's bring him into the show. I mean, this is a great idea.
I couldn't figure out, I couldn't remember how that happened, but I'm glad you did, because I mean, the show wouldn't have been the same without him. I mean, it won't be the same.
Never will be the same.
And I'm not entirely sure what to do about it. We're recording on Thursday. I don't know. That'll be a tough one. I mean, this is tough right here. But that next set of shows is going to be kind of fucking shit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, things go on, and that's the cycle of life. But I mean, he was 53, man. And just to go out like that, it sucks. Just sucks. So I don't know. We're bumming here at the Brewing Network. And, you know, we wish Lee safe travels to wherever he's going. And, you know, his friends and family, you know, hopefully they have some sort of comfort, you know, now that he's not suffering. And, and you know, he made a huge impact on the beer community in the Bay Area and wherever else. Yeah. Wherever else people were fucking listening to the show. Some yurt. In you know, the farmlands of wherever the hell they grow. I don't even think they grow food anymore, like in land. I think it's all test tubes. But if they did, someone's weaving together a yak fur and a yurt somewhere, listening to Lee prattle on about beer tasting. And I think that's cool. Well,
yeah, and they can still listen. You know,
he's still archived.
Yeah, it's still archived. There, yeah. Which is another reason why I think we're super lucky to have a talent like him on, because there's more people that can listen to him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And experience. This is what a master-level BJCP judge is like. It's what it should be like. This is how you give feedback. That's what it is.
And it's so great to get to hear him describe stuff versus just seeing what he can fit onto the little score sheet.
Yeah, right. Just right enough.
You have five little lines that are about 2 inches wide, and to get to hear someone with that knowledge and that level of experience.
Well, even there, he would flip over this.
I was just going to say, man, some of those.
Flip over the
score
sheets.
Oh, I know. He would go in all the border, right, all the margins and everything.
Half a page on the back of the damn score sheet.
I wanted to come over and just be like, do you want a second one? I got copies in here.
We have more paper, Lee. Here you go, buddy. And got lots of paper.
But that wasn't him. And I told you and him countless times, like, you guys don't have to fill out the sheet super well. Like, we can just riff on it. But that's not the training. I don't think that's where you are. I don't think that's where he was. I was in the wrong for asking you guys to dial that down and just talk about it, because tasting and didn't dawn on me. I'm a judge myself, but I'm so not ranked. I've done like two comps and I hate it.
It's what you're used to doing when you're a judge.
It's what you're used to doing, but I think that's what you need to do. It's not even what you're used to doing so much as you need to do that in order to explain the faults in the beer, or why you gave it such a score, and how to help it. And that's what I didn't see, and that's what he helped me.
What was great about the beer?
Yes. But that's what sitting here across the desk from him helped me to see, is that like there is a point, in order to get the good out of what I'm trying to say is you have to go through all that shit. You have to write everything down. You have to be thorough about it. You can't just skip ahead and want and expect to be a better judge, a better taster, or a better homebrew.
And the beer is changing before you as you're drinking it. There are certain components that will blow off after a little bit. You want to describe it at that moment as the thought comes to your head, and your head is kind of spinning sometimes when you're judging. I can see the wheels turning in his head probably way faster than mine, and he's jotting down all these things. And you know, as the beer warms and the flavors and aromas evolve, you take down this full impression of the beer as you're drinking it, and you give that feedback to the brewer. And I mean, that's the best thing you can do for someone, to help make their beer better, you know. But he shared that knowledge, and he did a great job of it, and just a very personable, great guy. So,
and I know he did that to commercial brewers as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a big loss for the entire community.
Yeah, with no
pro and homebrew.
Here's a straight shot.
Anyway, I want to make a toast to Lee, everyone. If you got some beer, Bev, cheers. Do you want some? No, you got some coffee. All right, to Lee, everyone.
To Lee.
We missed. Perfect. I don't know.
And we raised the toast to him at the Mad Zymergist meeting the other night, too, and it ended up being the last night he was alive, you know. And then I had seen my wife forward me a posting from the Bay Area Mashers, who have their meeting on the same night, and they were doing a
a big toast to him.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's just a picture of us on Facebook all raising our glass to Lee, and you know, he was in the throes of it, fighting for his life. And then the other day we went to the 21st Amendment Brewery to, you know, for another event, a happy event, of course, celebrating the Best of Show winner for Oktoberfest, Keith Cost and his fabulous Kulsh that we got to brew there. And I asked asked them nicely if I could step up onto their bar and raise a glass to Lee, which I did when I was, you know, just getting ready to, we were getting ready to do our tour, and I kind of had to gather some people anyway. So, David there, their tasting room manager at the brewery there in San Leandro was pretty gracious and gave us a good tour after that. But we were all thinking about Lee that day too. It's just kind of hits you. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
For sure, man.
Well.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess we should get out of here.
How do we transition out of this?
I don't know. And I was thinking about doing it three different ways, and I just we just got to keep on, and that's
it's the Brewing Network. He would, you know, Lee Network. Would want you to make a joke and move on, and just
he probably would have made some sarcastic comment that I hadn't done so already.
Exactly. He would know how to transition out of it better than we would, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be hard pressed to find a man who made more of an impact. Than that guy in this kind of scene, man, for sure.
True.
okay, before we go to the plugs, Warren, how you follow that up? I don't know. I want to thank our guest, Logan Plant from Beavertown. All these beers are rad, and I really appreciate you pulling all the stops, man. Ted Ramey, thank you very much for stopping in. And,
hey, my pleasure.
Hanging out. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you. I like it here.
There's no sports. So that's a relief for you.
There's Adam and Eve.
There's Adam and Eve.
Adam and Eve. Yeah. We'll always have Adam
that
and Eve.
That library is ready for you whenever.
We Adam and Eve. That's true. And they used to have like 10 free adult DVDs. And
I've seen that ad on TV before.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we would go around the room and start explaining what our favorite categories were. And it was a whole thing. So you got off light. No pun intended.
I don't think they say anything about the C bumper on TV, do they?
The what?
I'm not saying the word.
I think that's like what they call like the extra special gift.
The so secret it can't be mentioned.
Right.
It's I guess they finally figured out that it can be mentioned here.
Yeah.
Here. It's that standard, this is a good transition. Library. Yeah.
This is a great transition. Yeah. Perfect.
Right. If there's one thing Lee liked, it was C bumpers.
C bumpers. C bumper. I don't even know her. Doesn't matter. Okay, anyway, check out our other shows like Dr. Homebrew. Now would be a perfect time to go back and see what you missed, man.
Doc, you'll be here on Thursday?
I will be.
Because we need somebody.
I will be here.
Too soon!
I'm sorry.
And here I am.
So much so you'll even take me.
Well, he is a doctor.
Yeah. Here I am trying to resist making a Deathpool joke, and this asshole fucking...
I totally thought about that one earlier, and I was like, I can't be the one that says
that. No, you can't. You go to hell.
So is that the unlucky seat?
I'm sitting in Lee's seat tonight. It's kind of weird for me.
You'll be fine. Don't start coughing.
Warren stole my seat. Yeah.
Oh, God.
What?
Sorry. Okay, I know. We're getting too bring there. This is how we cope, Beverly.
Pretty much,
this is how we cope. Because this sucks.
Yeah.
All right, you ready, Warren?
I guess.
All right.
Start with the C bumper.
Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. And I'm pretty sure the next show will be a little bit better than this. All right, Warren, you ready?
Yeah. Thank you to our show sponsor, More Beer. You can get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. Logan Plant from Beavertown sent us a ton of great beer and filled us in on what he's been up to over on his side of the pond. Ted Ramey from KMBR was kind enough to put up with a few no-talent hacks, and Logan, and Brian, and Bevo. Brian stopped by in between his appointments over on Dr. Homebrew to help us remember our friend and fellow brewcaster Lee Shepard. And you can merge your love of Disneyland with your lack of engaging podcasts, and go over to earsuppodcast.com as JP, Terrence, Bevo, and Taryn talk about all things Disney. Go check out Moscow Hops cartoons over at hoplifestore.com. Get on Twitter for more great beer insight and homebrew info. Follow Nate Smith at Nathan Homebrew, Mike McDowell at Tasty McD, JP at Major Dip, and Warren's Adding to the Noise over at Another Beardy. Today's show was produced by JP or Bevo, or maybe neither, and your host has been JP.
Be sure to follow the Brewing Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Thanks, Lee.